They keep complaining. They're like, why do we always find ourselves going uphill? And it's like, because you're climbing a mountain. Oh my God. Welcome to episode 11 of Podigis, your bi-weekly critically nostalgic analytical tour through the Digimon multiverse. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
Hi.
And Asher Soffman.
Hi.
Ashley and I are here from the future. We're about to release this episode, and we're recording some follow-up last episode about episode 10. So the first piece of feedback is about corporal punishment, our discussion about Ty getting slapped. And Ashley, you thought that it was not okay?
I just disagree with it being in the face. Is mostly what I disagree with.
We've got a couple pieces of feedback about this. One from Conan the Third on With the Will, and another from Chakmon on With the Will. And Conan the Third's comment is interesting because it talks about different cultural perspectives. I think he is from Britain and Great Britain. Is it offensive to say Britain?
I don't know.
And, and how it's only started to become unacceptable very recently compared to the U.S. And so, yeah, I think that was an issue. And Chakmon basically just saying he thought that I deserved it. Which I think our discussion wasn't as much about whether he deserved or not, but whether it was, yeah. We thought that it wasn't culturally acceptable. And I liked Conan III's comment because it made me realize that, yeah, like our discussion, I was only thinking of it as a U.S. perspective. I don't even know what it's like in other countries. I guess I assumed that it was more accepted in Japan.
I assumed it was more accepted in Japan because you always see people getting slapped in the face in anime.
Yeah, and Conan III cites Gundam and background scenes of Rest of Adventure. So, yeah, I had a little bit of an exchange with him about how he said that it's a mindset of a different time, like the gender politics that we discuss a lot. And yeah, I agree, it is a different time, and it seems a little jarring now. Although unlike gender stuff is jarring now, but also still potentially hurtful now. No one is hurt by seeing Ty get slapped.
Whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I don't think it's completely like Ty's mom is terrible for doing this. You were pretty anti-Ty's mom, though.
I mean, it's like, I understand it in the moment. I'm just like, overall, is it okay to hit your kids? Maybe in the arm, maybe. But like, their face is pretty visible. If you go to like school with a black eye, so you're going to be like, how'd you get that?
It's not actually punched him in the eye.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, in theory, you probably shouldn't hit your kids in the face.
The next group of feedback is about Millenniummon and our discussion of how we'd heard the Machine Jamon was somehow involved, but we clearly see him die, so how's it happen? And also, he's supposed to... Millenniummon is supposed to be a combination of Machine Jamon and Chimeramon, and Chimeramon hasn't been created yet, so how would that even make sense? And we've got a couple pieces of feedback. One piece of feedback from Dot Yawning on Reddit, another from Earthworm Jim in our comment section, and another from Chris Richards in our comment section. And all basically saying that the official backstory is that Chimeramon, in his moment of dying, time travels to Machine Jamon in his moment of dying and prevents him from dying, and they emerge into Millenniummon. And, you know, briefly looked into the descriptions on Digimon wikis, I don't like his explanation. Like, there's no... Chimeramon is never shown to have time-traveling powers. So it's explainable that Millenniummon has time-travel powers, because Millenniummon is supposed to have time-travel powers. Whatever, that's his definition. But he's also formed by the time-travel. Like, Chimeramon doesn't have time-travel powers, but how does he time-travel to make Millenniummon? Anyway, one interesting aspect of this I thought was that Ashley doesn't remember too much about Zero Two, so she can't really comment on this, but that it kind of frames Ken's creation of Chimeramon in an interesting light, because... It means that it makes it a time loop, that Ken's creation of Chimeramon causes Chimeramon to merge into Millenniummon, which causes Millenniummon to implant a dark spore in Ken. And
Jeff really likes time travel.
But anyway, it makes you wonder if it like was part of the point of the dark spore that it caused Ken to create Chimeramon and kind of force him along that path. And I think based on I had a couple back and forth about this, I think that doesn't really make sense. I mean, the spore isn't really shown to be controlling Ken. The next piece of feedback is from Earthworm Jim in our comment section. A couple of different points. First one about our discussion of Mimi and Joe being punished for not wanting to fight. And he rightfully points out that the kids chose to take on this fight. They were in a position where they weren't fighting, and they chose to come to the digital world. I would argue that they were kind of forced into it, though. Not forcing, they all chose, but, you know, the consequences of them deciding to reject that were pretty bad. A lot of peer pressure.
It's also, if they had the choice to begin with, then they should be able to choose not to.
But right. So what he's saying is that they had the choice to begin with. Oh, you're saying that like...
I'm saying then they should have had the choice to renege on that choice.
I mean, I think that's a worthwhile lesson that like once you've made a commitment, you should follow through with it.
Oh, because that's not always worth it.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, not...
I mean, if the world's about to end, that's probably worth it, but...
Yeah, and I think psychologically we are, as humans, tuned to think of things in terms of promises like this that aren't really. It's the whole sunk cost fallacy. Like, if I start watching an anime this season and I watch, like, Space Dandy, I'm not actually watching this season, but when I watched the first season, like half a year ago or whatever, I watched 5 or 6 episodes and was like, I need to keep watching because I've already started. And I'm like, I really don't like this show, but I've watched 6 episodes, so I really can't stop watching it. That's totally not. That's a sunk cost fallacy. No matter how much time you spent putting into it so far, you should weigh decisions based on their future reward or cost. So I stopped watching it. And yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. So the other part of this piece of feedback from Earth 1 Jim is talking about the different fields. And I forget exactly what we said last episode because it's been so long since we recorded it and since I released it now. But he says that the different VPETs were, I guess, themed to different fields. So you would kind of, it seems a bit to me like the Pokemon versions that, you know, like with each version, you get a different subset of Pokemon. But I guess more along, like Pokemon is like you 2 or 3 per generation. It's not really divided in depth, these seem to be. So if you bought a Deep Savers VPET, you would only be able to raise Deep Savers Digimon, is his point. Which is, I think, an interesting idea. I don't know. Never had the toys, but that explains where they come from. Doesn't explain why they're so weird and arbitrary. I guess I still think Digimon wanted to be different and not just be like fire Digimon and water Digimon. And
you didn't want to use the 4 earth elements.
Yeah.
How lame.
We also got a bit of feedback from our friend Ian via email. And it was about, forgot to mention Angemon as being a sacrifice.
Yeah, we forgot to mention Angemon as being a sacrifice. And he is different than the other sacrifices. But it doesn't really change our point, which is that, like, in the instances of sacrifices, people are either sacrificing themselves for the whole group or for a girl. And Angemon sacrificed himself for the whole group. So if he had thrown himself in front of TK, that would have been cool too, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I could see someone arguing that it was for TK, but my personal stances are not enough evidence, no either way. We don't know enough of Angemon's psyche or Padamon's psyche.
Rewatching that scene, he didn't seem like he knew he was sacrificing himself. He was just like, I'm going to attack. Oh, now I'm dying.
I'll come back.
Yeah.
If you want me to.
Exactly.
He just wanted validation.
Yeah. Angemon just always has to be special. Seriously.
Ian's email also talked about our discussion of the restaurant, the Digimon restaurant, and how the Digimon world doesn't feel real. And I guess his point was that, so this is what he said. The thing about the restaurants being so weird is that, yes, it is rare to see Digimon in the digital world leading human lives, but unless those lives are important to the plot at hand, it's easier to throw those scenes away. And I understand. I understand that, like, there's not enough time to just show Digimon in their daily lives, but that doesn't need to be the focus. That can be in the background. And more so, it's just something at the restaurant that just feels weird. It feels like an anomaly. It doesn't feel like we're getting a glimpse into how Digimon live their lives. It feels like, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I just also feel like the show should have spent some time being like, this is what the digital world is like when there aren't crazy evil people that they have to defeat. Like, what do Digimon do?
Right. I feel like they started to, the Monochromon in the very beginning feels like an attempt to kind of show what life was like in the digital world without them. But that's, you know, never followed up on. It just comes off as, okay, that's a Monochromon act. And so my memories of Tamers are hazy, but I do recall them being better at this. That there are several, there's at least one residence shown. There are, you know, groups of Digimon that are like herds. You see Digimon actually fighting for survival. And in Frontier, we do see the city from this arc actually return in 02, but Frontier, we see cities actually feel like cities that have like festivals and restaurants. Part of it is that it just feels more human-like. So I guess like when you see something like that and they're like, okay, we can understand this because it's a city. Okay. You don't need to actually see people going around doing lots of city things if you just, there's coded language that you just pick up on. And adventure feels like they use coded language, but like so minimally that it's like, this restaurant doesn't feel like we are seeing one of several restaurants. It feels like we're seeing the restaurant.
Right.
I don't know what they could have, I'm drawing a blank on what they could have done to make that better. Maybe, you know, like have some of the partner Digimon talk about how
if
this
I
is had, one of many restaurants or something.
There were like never any Digimon in the restaurant
there
either.
Were a
there
couple,
was like
right?
one. Or like one or two at different times, like one at a time.
Even if there were other Digimon in the restaurant, that doesn't really sell me on it, because then I'm just wondering, like, where did these Digimon come from? Like, are these just the two Digimon that hang out here, or do they travel from all over the world? Actually, think about it. I think 02 does a better job of this, because they can hop around the Digital World, so they don't really... They can just be like, here's a setting for one episode. Anything else?
I feel like the only part that gave me an actual glimpse into Digital World Digimon lives was like the village of Yokomon and random villages.
True.
Rather than a restaurant.
I forgot about the Yokomon village and the not Koromon village. It was a Koromon village, but it was occupied by Pokemon.
Yeah.
But it was the Koromon village initially. And those villages, I mean, I guess I forgot about them because they don't seem realistic. Like, they seem to just be a place where a lot of Yokomon live, and I don't understand how Yokomon could actually get food or survive.
Right. See, with like it's like, okay, this seems like a more realistic portrayal of what the digital world is like, but I also don't understand how it works at all. Like,
yeah, I don't know. It's hard to take like this that already exists and retrofit things into it to make things, to expand on things more. And I think it'll be interesting to look at the other seasons and see if they're better at this. The next piece of feedback comes from Luz Therentelemon. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. And the part that I found interesting was describing they had a younger sibling who acted similarly to Kari, saying the younger brother, it seems that if they accidentally hurt them, then the younger brother wouldn't blame them, and the younger brother wouldn't get upset, or get upset over the possibility of getting them in trouble instead of the little brother. And so, I mean, I don't think that Kari's an extreme. I don't think that path of being so selfless is crazy. And this frames it interesting. Like, I, as a younger sibling, never, I don't think I acted this way. I don't think I was super selfless. I think I was pretty selfish, actually. And Ashley's an only sibling. And Asher is an older sibling, so I wonder how... I think
too bad we don't have Asher.
Asher kind of bullies his younger brother. So
a little bit.
I wonder if Andrew... I don't know how that dynamic... Anyway, so yeah, it's an interesting perspective, but I think that Kari is still like at the extreme of that spectrum. This comment was valuable in making me realize that siblings do kind of act like this in real life, but
Kari doesn't just act like it towards Ty. Like, she has her weird light sacrifice powers. I don't know. Like,
yeah, and the thing is that even if this is realistic, it's still problematic. You know, like, it's still like she should learn that this kind of sacrifice and selfless attitude isn't necessary or even good. And
well, apparently she does learn.
The next piece of feedback points out from Jelloey?
Jelloey
on Reddit points out that in 02, Kari does learn to improve her faults, that there's a confrontation with Yoli about that specifically. So that's cool. I'm looking forward to that.
I look forward to 02 is all I have to say about that.
Yeah. There are lots of reasons to look forward to 02, lots of reasons to dread it, lots of reasons to skip it and just make
no,
a show about tamers.
No, we're not skipping it.
We'll just do like five episodes for each episode of tamers. Mm. But let's do that.
Yeah, no.
We found out from RMZYY. I feel like people are just having a competition to come up with names that we can't pronounce.
Rimzy!
I mean, sure, if you want to do that. Anyway, we found out from Rimzy that there are people who actually like Edamon. They're saying that their dad like Edamon. That's kind of interesting.
There's also somebody on Twitter who said they liked Edamon.
I forget who that was. But I wonder about that. I could see Edamon being a thing that like parents would understand. They'd be like, they did watch Edamon and think, I don't understand anything about this stupid show. Oh, look, an Elvis impersonator. I can
Wait,
sympathize with that monkey.
Don't you want to say your new theory that it's not actually Elvis? It's that like weird guy.
So I was listening to a podcast. What's the name of the podcast? I was listening to Common Sense with Dan Carlin talking about Gary Glitter, which is someone I never heard of. He was an English glam rock singer, songwriter, and musician. He had a highly successful career. It ended in the late 90s for a controversy about child pornography and sexual abuse of children. And it made me wonder if that was the inspiration for Edamon instead of Elvis. Because he would have been more...
He looks
a lot like Elvis. He would have been much more in the news in the 90s than now when this information was coming out. I think the reason that Dan Carlin was talking about him on Common Sense was that there's been some more information that's been revealed recently. But anyway, like, he would have been more talked about in the 90s. I don't know about whether in Japan they talked about him, though.
Are you saying that Edamon is a pedophile?
I don't know. There's no evidence for either Elvis or Gary Glitter being associated with monkeys or monkey suits. Having him chase the kids like that, I could just see that connection. I'm not saying that Edamon is supposed to be a pedophile. I'm saying that if you're introducing a villain who's going to chase the kids through a desert, that maybe the source you go to is someone who's been in the news recently for pedophilia. I'm not sure. It's just an interesting thing, because everything I've read about Edamon has said it is definitely Elvis. And I think this is evidence that maybe it isn't Elvis. But, I mean, Edamon's name itself comes from...
This is more of our Digimon fanfiction.
But yeah, so Edamon's name comes from Etoku, which is a personified monkey. Elvis at least makes sense, because it's like, eh.
Yeah.
The E in Edamon is Elvis.
There's an E.
I think as a kid, that's what I thought it was. But anyway. So the second to last piece of feedback comes from Dot Yawning on Reddit, talking about actually follow-up from two episodes ago, and we covered it in follow-up last episode, talking about how the unofficial translations for the Japanese terms came to be, why they accepted by everyone, how we all say adult, perfect, and then ultimate, why those translations of the Japanese names have stuck. And he speculates that it was Meg-chan from this Digimon Encyclopedia that it seems was very prominent and popular back in the time when Digimon was airing. That makes sense to me. If anyone has any more information, that'd be interesting. The very last piece of feedback comes from my friend Miles, and responding to our discussion of, I briefly brought up, I'm not covering this. We were talking about something, it's topical now, though. So we were talking about something, and I mentioned that in Naruto, I really can't remember the context, but in Naruto, there's a thing that is employed where a character sticks fingers into someone's butt as a move or something and yells Kancho, and then it became a thing in Japanese schools or something, that kids would do this and emulate it. And I said that it was started by Naruto, and apparently Miles said that it's a thing that, was in Naruto but wasn't started by it. So according to Wikipedia, it is even used by adults too, like baseball players.
Cool. Super mature.
This is very strange, but this is topical recently because of the news that the Digivice news on Kotaku. What was the original story? We'll have this linked in the show notes, this Kotaku story about... Oh no, it was in the instructions for a Digivice. It said to not put it in your butt.
Right. Well, you assume because somebody did put it in their butt at some point.
I guess, but I'm wondering... Anyway, so this link will be in the show notes, and I mocked up the little Pottage's logo with the don't put it in your butt logo, because you should only listen to this podcast in your ears.
Yes.
This week we're covering the defeat of Paimon and Poppymon, so here's a quick recap.
We pick up directly after the defeat of Machinedramon.
In episode 50, Joe's Battle, Joe leaves Mimi with a gaggle of past admirers to go off on his own and find Matt and himself. Anjuwomon gets into a catfight with Lady Devimon, because girls, lol. Tai sends Sora and Tike to find the others.
In episode 51, The Crest of Friendship, Matt discovers that depression hurts everywhere as he gets consumed by darkness. After realizing that people like him, they really like him, Matt snaps out of it, but the smoke monster moves on to Sora. Matt and Joe drag her out of the darkness, and they reunite to fight Paimon.
In episode 52, Paimon's Last Jest, Paimon turns almost all the kids in their Digimon into a set of adorable keychains that everyone wishes actually existed. Angemon finally gets the memo about Digivolving to Ultimate, wields Excalibur, and de-typifies the gang. Mimi and her posse appear, and together everyone sends Paimon blasting off again! Ding!
In episode 53, now Apocalypse, the darkest of the dark Digimon, appears. Apocalypse destroys the crests while the kids are distracted by how terrible his stand-up routine is, and converts them into data and destroys the show's budget. Without an animation budget, the kids awkwardly recap pivotal scenes until they could be animated again.
In episode 54, The Fate of Two Worlds, the kids ride their Digimon into battle and take out Apocalypse in a blaze of glory. The digital world gets reborn, and the kids plan to get 110 years of sunburn there. However, because the portal between the two worlds is closing, the show wraps up with the kids returning home. Favorites. So I had three favorite things, and in order were the keychains, which I thought were visually cool, but also conceptually a cool way to have an actual threat to their safety and have kids be taken out, with the obvious caveat that the kids can't actually be killed. So it was one of the few ways that they could actually, I guess they've had them be petrified before, but this was a cool way to, have them be taken out and they're still there, but it's creepy form. So that was pretty cool. And I mean, it visually looks really nice. And why don't they make them as real toys? It's just the biggest unanswered question in the series.
All of us would buy them. I would buy all of them.
Go gotta collect them all.
Gotta catch them all.
I also really like the goodbyes at the end of this arc and the end of the season. They focus on each Digidestin and Digimon partner pairing, and they're not all consistent. I mean, some of them are hit or miss. I particularly liked Matt and Gabumon, how they have nothing to say. Like, they're, it's mostly silent, and yeah. Matt is...
I forgot about this.
I think Gabumon asked Matt to play the harmonica. I actually really liked...
yeah, he does.
We made fun of the silly recaps in the... In our recap, we made fun of how in the second last episode, they, while they're all, like, getting their... reactivating their quests that are part of themselves, they have like awkward recaps of the when their quests are first activated, and apparently in Japanese that is not dubbed over at that point. But anyway, in English they have this really awkward dubbing where they're like, and I remember that time when we did this thing, and it's like, okay, like, come on, like, it sounds so awkward. But I loved
Matt and Gabumon's was so good.
Yeah, Matt and Gabumon's. I was considering making a ridiculous dialogue thing, but it's too hard to like summarize because it's just like, is it Gabumon starts describing it and Matt's like, I know, I remember it. And Gabumon keeps trying.
He's like, you don't need to say anything.
I actually didn't have that on my ridiculous dialogue thing, and I was just going to mention it and make you put it in there.
Oh, thanks.
And yeah, I mean, we talked before about how the kids, the episode with Patamon and Tiki when they're on their own, does a really good job of portraying what little kids would actually act like, and I thought these goodbyes were a good job of that too. Like Palmon and Mimi was particularly sad in how kids would actually act. Well, I guess Palmon was the one who was more childish there, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one was the depression that's portrayed in this with Matt, Sora, and a little bit of Joe. And yeah, we'll get into that later. So I don't need to go into too much here.
Go, Asher.
I had a couple favorite things. My top thing is pretending that episode 50 didn't happen just entirely. And then my other favorite things, one of them is... Oh, yeah, okay. So in episode 52, or 51? 51, my bad. Episode 51. When Garurumon comes and just nuzzles WarGreymon, all of a sudden he's completely healed in a shower of sparkles and rainbows. And this is the moment. This is the moment I was waiting for since I first mentioned Matt and Ty as a pairing. Because this, what can I say about this? This is the gayest moment in all of season one, anyway.
Well, you definitely made it gayer by talking about a shower of sparkles.
I did. But it was pretty darn gay.
No, when I watched it, I was like, wow.
It was great. It was great. And then my other favorite thing is I wrote down in my notes, in all capitals, okay, I really love the sharing of crests, okay? I have a lot of feelings, okay? Okay.
Okay, okay.
Okay.
The fault in our stars.
Okay.
You just inadvertently quoted that.
I think the most... That is the end message we get here. This is how they defeat the last bad guy. This is, it's not just the power within them, which they've been developing and which is so important as part of how they've been growing and how they're becoming their own people. But it's also shared. It's, they've become such good friends. They even share Digimon, sort of, in a way, in these last couple episodes.
Yeah, Sora and Gomamon had some weird thing.
I really liked that. I felt so bad for Gomamon. But, I had a lot of feelings about that. But, the bonds they've created is what gives them strength. It's not just Ty's courage, it's all of their courage. It's not just Kari's light, it's all of their light. And I just really liked that. I really like that is what the show tried to teach, even if they didn't always do so well on the demonstrating teamwork thing.
Yeah, they tried to teach you that friendship is magic.
Yeah, I guess. Except, you know...
Without ponies.
They'd call it power. They'd call it power here.
Whatever.
I talked before about how it's weird how the core message of Digimon usually boils down to friendship, and that's basically what this was, but they couldn't say the word friendship because that's coded as being Matt's thing. So it's like, they had to be like, it's our bonds, and my thing is your thing, and...
Well, I would point out that Matt was the first one who brought it up, because he was like, it's not my friendship, it's all of our friendship. He was the first one to say that.
Well, okay, yeah, that's also weird, because like, that one makes the most sense to be a shared thing. Like, you can't have friendship without it being mutual. So I feel like everyone else yeah. jumping on the bandwagon, like, my light is everyone's light, and Matt be like, no, that's not what I meant. I meant, like, come on, like, friendship is mutual. Kari.
God, it's only our friendship.
But it makes sense, though, that being around each other helped one another develop those same qualities. Like, I learned how to be more determined by hanging out with Ashley, you know?
Aww.
Aww. Ashley, did you learn anything from me?
Be a nicer person.
Aww.
We didn't learn anything from Jeff.
This is getting too sappy. I'm shutting this off. Too sappy.
Okay, Jeff, whatever. Bye.
Yeah, we don't need you.
Yeah.
We're kidding.
Okay. Okay, my favorite is them riding Digimon. They're Digimon in the last battle, even though it made no sense.
It's beautiful.
And, like, why was, like, Mimi's arm would have fallen off the way that Lilymon was holding
her. Tossing her around by the arm.
Like, she would have had at least a dislocated shoulder. Something would have happened. Okay.
This is the digital world.
This is, spoilers for Adventure Time, but this is how someone loses their arm in Adventure Time.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, Finn loses his arm this way. It just snaps off. Well, it's like, he's trying to find his father, and he meets him, and the father is trying to, like, run away while they're in, like, a prison that's collapsing. He's basically, like, on a spaceship that's, like, floating away, and Finn, like, grabs the end of it or something, and it's just, like, floating away, and he, like, you know, he's, like, holding two ends, and, like, his body is what's, you know, keeping them together. Essentially, his arm pops off. And
okay.
It's also really creepy because the other show that they created, Adventure Time, Penn Ward, makes Bravest Warriors, which was, like, a small YouTube show. In the latest episode, another character loses their arm while in the search for someone else's father. And I'm like, is this a thing that he's obsessed with characters losing their arms while looking for father figures? Like,
maybe it's a Star Wars reference?
Oh, I didn't think of that. Although, in Star Wars, it's so BS because it's just like, I lost my arm and now I have a completely functional, what do they call it? Inflammable Alchemist?
Oh, I don't know.
Automail.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't have an arm, but I have a completely functional arm that's even better than the old arm. Not in Star Wars, I guess, but
I don't think the automail is more functional than a real arm in Full Metal Alchemist.
Is it? Can it like, defend against swords and stuff?
Yeah, it's metal, but
and he turns it into a sword. Like, you can't turn your hand into a sword.
That's alchemy, and actually, you probably could. Shouldn't.
But his, like, the automail, he changes it into a sword based on alchemy, but it moves without alchemy. So it's still just functional.
It's automail. It's connected to his nerves, yes. But I think it is, it doesn't grow with him. It's... You want to do a Full Metal Alchemist podcast?
You don't want to be a suit of armor? I don't understand.
I'm also thinking about it because the show that I'm watching is airing now, Black Bullet, has a very similar... Actually, I think it's a... Like, in Full Metal Alchemist, he's missing an arm and a leg, right?
Yes.
This is the same thing in this show. I just like this idea of, like, having a character with a disability that then is, like, there's no... It's very cheap to just be like, they don't have an arm, but they have this other arm that's just as cool or even cooler.
Well, Ed's... Automail is not, it may be cooler, but it's not the same as having a real arm, which is why he wants his real arm back.
I guess so.
Yeah, he wants his real arm back. Like, that's the whole point of the show.
It just, compared to Al, like, Al has so much more going on.
You don't want to be a pseudo arm, I don't understand.
I mean, it's a little cool, but it's also, like, they actually get into interesting questions about, like, if he's been growing or if he's just a copy of his boss at the time or if he's, you know, been manipulated by Ed to not actually be himself. And there's so much more interesting going on there than just, like, I wish my arm were less cool. I mean, I'm simplifying, obviously, but...
We obviously should have made a Full Metal Alchemist podcast because there's a lot cooler things going on.
So many. There would be so much less to make fun of because it was so much better.
Yeah, it was so much better and, like, more serious.
Yeah, I don't know if I would be a good choice for that podcast. So many good ladies.
No cat fights between.
Yeah, no cat
angels
fights
and devil
between
ladies.
Yeah. Good job, Full Metal Alchemist.
How did we get on this tangent? How did I bring us on this tangent?
Because I said Mimi would have lost her arm had Lilymon been carrying her like that. Which is still true. True fact.
Still true. Although Mimi with an automail arm would be kind of cool.
Right?
Oh, wait, but I can climb back to that briefly. What I like about Adventure Time is that Finn lost his arm, and right now he doesn't have an arm.
Really?
Yeah. He has a little, leaf sprout thing that's just like he like is where his elbow would be, I guess.
Wait, did you watch the latest episode? Because I kind of heard that he gets his arm sort of back.
No.
Nah.
Well, I mean, I know. Well, yeah. I mean, there have been other things in the Adventure Time pseudo canon. Like, there have been episodes where there's been like time travel, or the comic book, which isn't technically Adventure Time canon, has had episodes set in the future with time travel. And there have been a lot of references to him having like a mechanical arm in the future. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a mechanical arm, which I guess defeats the whole purpose of what I just said is cool about it.
Yep. Pretty much.
Mimi without an arm.
Mimi without an arm would be awesome. That's pretty much the conclusion.
Also, the line where Lilimon throws her, and then like Mimi's like, "Why'd you have to use me as a boomerang?" And Lilimon's like, "Because I wanted you to come back."
Oh yeah, that was cute. That was weird. No, that was weird. I don't understand.
It was. I understand the joke. I think it was poorly constructed dialogue because Mimi wasn't asking.
Yeah, that's not like the response made no sense.
Lilimon's response sounded like she asked, "Why did I come back?" instead of "Why'd you throw me?"
Yeah, it was very dumb. It was like it meant to be cute, but it wasn't.
It was cute to me.
Okay.
Was there anything more to the writing, Digimon?
No.
I keep bringing it off to book.
Well, I'd just like to point out again that it's the same as in the opening.
Oh, yeah.
It was massive foreshadowing the whole time.
Yes, you're right. They didn't just reuse it.
Yeah, they totally didn't reuse it. Wait, so
it was the same shots, exactly?
Pretty much.
Wait, how is Lilimon carrying Mimi then?
Except not Lilimon. That's the one that was different.
How is she just like on, is Mimi on Lilimon's back?
No, Mimi's... no, this isn't, this is with the champion levels. Go watch the opening. But, no, in the opening, Mimi's sitting on Togemon's hand. But all the rest of them are riding their Digimon into battle, and it's exactly the same as, at the end there.
See, I just think it is weird they didn't think of this as a thing they did before at this point.
Matt's rode Gabumon before.
Gabumon?
I mean, what's the point of it? Like... helpful.
I would actually think it's safer than leaving the kids there, because then Apocalypse can't go attack them undefended.
That's true. It was weird how the like for Garurumon, they made a point of how she had to drop Sora off to attack, and it's like I would think there'd be other Digimon too that would have that, but I guess with Lilimon and Mimi.
Maybe it was so Apocalypse couldn't use his digivolving thing, because what would it do to a human?
What would it do to a human? I wish you'd gotten someone.
I mean, it would do what happens in the movie, the first Zero-Two movie.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Wait, what?
That'd be cool. You'll see.
I don't think Ashley remembers it.
You'll see.
It's kind of weird in the English version. It's, like, barely there. Since we're not going to really have main topics about the villains in particular, the Paimon and Apocalypse, I want to talk about them briefly in this segment, just talking about the general arc. And Paimon, I don't know.
Paimon.
I only have a couple things to say about him. I liked how in the first episode he is looming on the horizon. He, I think, did a good job hyping up his power, although the fight that was going on while he's looming on the horizon is ridiculous. But I think he did a good job of, you know, like making him seem like more of an environmental threat that is a kind of like in Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire, the White Walkers are just a looming threat. They're not really, you don't get the sense that they're people with motivations or anything. It's just like these are things that are going to come and destroy everything. That's kind of not what it reminded me of until just now, but it
actually had the opposite effect on me, because against like the mountains and everything, it showed that he's not very big. He's like normal adult sized. I was like, okay, well, you're not that threatening.
So interesting.
I never really got this threatening sense.
Right? I feel like the Dark Masters have subverted the size equaling power thing. Like the biggest have been Metal Seedramon and Machine Dramon, which were
the shortest. Yeah.
Kind of defeated the easiest. Yeah. And Puppetmon and Paimon are the most played out. And Puppetmon is the smallest and the longest and the most difficult to defeat.
And the most interesting.
Yeah.
Wait, did you guys ever notice how big Garurumon is in that one shot?
Which shot?
Episode 50. Whenever they beat Paimon.
She's massive. She's awesome.
Yeah. In the episode with Magna and Jamon first appearing. And they all like come together again. I think there's a shot where it's all of them together, and then Garurumon is just like so huge that it's mostly just her in the frame, and everybody else being like poorly animated dots.
They're pretty inconsistent with that.
I think I'm pretty sure there have been times where she's shown to be like the same height as like Greymon and stuff.
Really?
I think. I'm not 100% sure. I've definitely heard about other characters being consistently drawn like that. Can't remember if it was Garurumon. I thought it was interesting how they make a point of Piedmon treating everything like a game, which is kind of like an idea they were toying around with here that they're going to expand on a lot more in the future with Ken in Adventure 02 and you. Or I don't know what his in-dub name is, actually, because I only watched Cross Wars in subtitled when it was coming out. But those are both human characters that, spoiler alert, for 02 and Cross Wars, are villainous because they treat Digimon, the whole digital world, as a game, and so they don't think their consequences to death.
Wait, so is the spoiler that, or that they're human?
That they treat it like a game. I guess that's a spoiler. I'm thinking, like, if you didn't know that about the Digimon Emperor going into 02, that would be a spoiler.
You think?
It would become obvious very quickly.
It would.
Yeah, the Digimon Emperor is resolved pretty quickly. You in Cross Wars is actually drawn out until the very end, or a couple of slices before the end. So, well, he's not really a villain until halfway through anyway. So. He's also not really much of a villain at all. So. Until near the end. Like, Ash, you watched half of Cross Wars, right?
I wouldn't say half. I watched part of Cross Wars.
Was he even in what you watched?
I don't think so. Is he what's-her-name's little brother?
Yeah. Actually, not him, but that's a pretty cool subversion of the damsel in distress. It's like a girl saving her little brother.
Yeah.
Is that not, you don't like that?
It is, but it's also, like, the girl is only in the mix because of a guy, you know?
Hmm.
I'd also say if it's, I don't know their ages, so I won't say anything, never mind.
Why? What were you going to say?
Define little brother.
I don't remember. He's not that young. He's maybe the age of the characters in this season, I think.
Yeah, but then you older. Also have the whole mothering character.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but I didn't know like if he was older. So
Yeah, I don't know how old the Cross Wars kids are.
I'd still say, though, if it was like a mother that was, if it was a mothering thing, but then they were fighting and shown to be really badass as a mother, that's still subversion in an interesting way.
Yeah, but it's still using the trope.
Yeah. It's still better than a guy saving a damsel in distress.
It's different, yeah.
Ash isn't giving you this point.
Well, no. That's me not wanting to say, you know, necessarily that guys saving girls are bad. It's just that we need, the point is to have more than just that.
Right, to have diversity in how these things are represented. Yeah. Well, that's all Cross Wars. Back to adventure. I forget, did I mention, I think I, there's a little bit of confusion because we recorded the beginning of this twice, so forgive me if I repeat something, but the keychains, Piedmon's method of taking, turning the Digimon and their partners into keychains, I thought was a cool way to, you know, narrow down the characters without actually killing them, because they obviously couldn't kill them. But my first thought was like, it's, you know, removing the stakes by just temporarily disabling them, like, shouldn't Piedmon be trying to kill them?
I didn't understand why he didn't kill Andromon.
Oh, yeah, he made Andromon a keychain, too, didn't
he? Yeah, he made Andromon a keychain.
And he has killed Digimon before.
Right, he killed Chumon, and presumably was part of killing Pixiemon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is inconsistent with that, but I like how it's represented here as being, like, he doesn't care about actually killing them, he's just, like, playing around with them and, like, is so in control that he doesn't need to kill them. But it is kind of, I don't know what that says, that the presumably biggest villain up to that point, who you think is going to be the final villain, doesn't care about killing them as much as taking them out and winning and toying with them.
And he definitely, throughout, has been all about that. Like, he's all about the show.
Mm-hmm.
No, but it to me, it related to, I guess we'll just rearrange these topics, but it related to Puppetmon's dolls of all of them that he used to manipulate them, which are weirder because I don't know how that worked. What crazy magic was that?
Dolls. How come those dolls I had no interest in buying, but I wanted to buy these keychains so badly?
Keychains are cuter, aren't they?
I think so.
I think keychains is also like you can just put them on stuff and like they're subtle.
What would you do with the dolls?
Yeah, what would you do with the dolls? They just like sit somewhere.
Yeah, true.
They're not that cute. but yeah, I guess Puppet Mom was also the playing around one, but his dolls make less sense to me overall. Because is that like a power of his? Like, that's a really crazy power.
I think they could justify that being a power because, I mean, that makes more sense for him to be, he's a puppet master.
A puppeteer, yeah.
Right, whereas Piedmon is like, I have the skill that turns you into puppets, and also Magna Angemon has the skill to reverse it. Like, that's really arbitrary.
Yeah, no.
Well, I think Magna just has the skill to heal.
Right.
I think is
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah, that's how I just find
also, it. Also, keychains? It's so random. Whatever.
It is so random in such a... These must have been sold in Japan, because it feels like such a toy advertisement.
It right. does feel like, does, yeah.
And why don't toys, I have the toys?
They don't... It feels like that, but they don't look like it. They don't look detailed enough. Like, there's not enough attention paid to them as toys to sell them, I feel. It's definitely weird. Like, why keychains?
So strange.
I really wish we'd gotten more backstory on the Dark Masters, because I think it would have made this arc more satisfying. And like, I don't know, I'm just very curious about Puppetmon and Piedmon in particular, because they have so much in common.
Yeah.
The other two don't really.
Yeah.
But actually, you love the Surfer Bro Metal Seizuremon so much.
Yeah, I love Super Bro yeah. Metal Seizuremon. I don't need to know more.
Not Super, Surfer.
Surfer, I know. I just can't talk. I don't really feel like I need to know more about him, though. Like, I feel like I've imprinted a personality onto him enough that
yeah.
I was
like,
okay.
I just want to see more of him. He was fun.
Yeah. Like, Machine Dramon, I'm still wondering what's he about. I
yeah,
don't know.
Same here. I just, if these guys were going to be, you know, the ultimate bad guys of this season, I wish we'd had more hints about them earlier and also just a little more background on what they were actually after as a group.
Yeah. yeah. It's a shame because I'm just thinking of ways this could have been done. And it seems like they had the opportunity. They had several scenes of showing them in their little war room before they were dispatched to go to their regions. And like, it reminds me in particular of, Kingdom Hearts, what is the Chain of Memories? Is what I'm thinking of. Most of the Kingdom Hearts games haven't done a particularly good job of showing the perspectives of the villains at all, and it's kind of just been these like it's been pretty black and white, and like these are the bad guys, and they have this plan, and you know, like it's a little more complicated than that. But I mean, they generally don't show the perspectives of the bad guys, except for this game Chain of Memories, where you see lots of infighting and these characters having lots of different opinions and goals and betraying each other. And it's also interesting because the game is split up into two halves. I guess one is more weighted, so it's not really has like 60-40%, and there's like the top half, like above ground part of the castle and the below ground part of the castle, and there's like a different protagonist going through in parallel, and you see like the villains of one group will like go down to the basement and then interact in the other part of the game, and then they'll come back and forth, and it's really interesting. And that's what it reminds me of. These scenes of showing the bad guys like in their little war council, they could have been like, instead of just being like, oh, they're in the water part, I'm gonna go now, I'm Metal Seizuremon Surfer Bro. They could have been like arguing about who gets to go and like having their personalities conflict, and just my wish.
Yeah, that's all of our wishes. And then we get Apocalypse. Where does he come from? Why does he exist?
He's just made of jokes.
No, he comes from that have been lost in the process of digivolution, whatever he said.
Right. So why does he have the attacks of people that they've defeated? I don't understand.
Because he's...
I wish that I had had time to watch the Apocalypse episodes, or at least the parts with him in particular in Japanese. Because what I read on the Digimon Wiki was that in Japanese, he doesn't have an individual personality.
Is he serious?
Yeah, I think he's supposed to be much more serious and also doesn't have an individual personality. He's just a representative of everyone who's died.
And so
I'm wondering if this, like, the data that was lost from evolution was, like, so many things out there that are confusing. It's like, they say it's a data lost from evolution, digivolution, but then also say that it's the Digimon who didn't get to digivolve.
Well, I think they're actually, the whole time we've sort of had digivolution as a separate process from evolution, because evolution doesn't work like that. But here we have a very strange conflation of the two, where they compared it to real evolution in the human in our world, where, you know, natural selection takes its course.
Yeah.
And Izzy mentions, like, yeah, there are a lot of species that have gone extinct. And that's what I got out of it, is that he is the Digimon that have gone extinct. And the reason he had the other villains' powers is because they're dead and they've been taken out of the running. They've been taken out of the future.
Yeah, it would make more sense to me in a setting like Tamers, where they focus on the digital world being a brutal place where there is a lot of fighting and death. I feel like the only sense we got of that in Adventure is the fight with the Monochromon in the beginning, where it doesn't seem like they're actually going to kill each other.
Oh, there was also, I forgot to bring this up last time, but Ogremon was being cornered by, what, Vegemon?
Woodmon.
Possibly? Woodmon. Right. And true. They didn't seem to be aligned with the Dark Masters, actually. They were just mobbing this guy.
Mm. But it's also just... It doesn't gel with the rest. Like the,
it doesn't.
The,
like, and it's
so Digimon get reborn. And
Digimon
they also
get reborn,
go,
yeah. And there's many different iterations of one type of Digimon. Like there were, 50,000 Yokomon? But,
Yeah, I actually interpreted his words as, I mean, this doesn't make sense either, but I interpreted it as, Digimon who were trying to Digivolve, but somehow in the process just, failed and died, and then he became
That's what I wasn't sure if they were aiming at either.
But I we don't know if that's a thing that happens in this world, so.
There's a lot introduced in this arc that's things that don't really make sense with the way the rest of the world has been portrayed. That's just here's a prophecy, here's a wall of fire. And
it's a firewall, guys. OMG!
Why didn't they just say firewall? They should have just said firewall. I'm just so frustrated about that. I understand that probably the direction in Adventure was to make it more of a fantasy setting, which totally confused me, because if they wanted to separate it from Pokemon, which they probably must have been thinking about, I don't know why they wouldn't have just doubled down on digital things. Why not talk about how it's a firewall and...
Jeff is so angry.
The introduction to that firewall here. I was about to talk about this anyway. It's super weird to bring it in now. All of a sudden, that's obvious. But it could have been so much more interesting if it was an actual firewall, and they talked about how it was on the other side of this firewall is all the data that's corrupt data, or it's things we don't know about that aren't part of the digital world. Instead, it's just we're in a cave. Here's a wall of fire, and this thing came from beyond it. I don't know.
The thing I'm getting from this is we all need to write our own speculative Digimon fan fiction.
I don't want to correct the plot holes in this. People talk about all the plot holes in 02, and I'm this world still doesn't, even before we get all this stuff that's added in 02, it still doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And this never brought up again, this firewall, even though it's a source of, I think I say it's a source of all evil?
No, I think beyond it is where Apocalypse came from, so I guess beyond it is the source of all evil.
Yeah, my problem with this world is that there are prophecies, and the way you do prophecies normally is not just to be there's a prophecy, here it is, let's go do it. Normally the prophecy has folklore behind it of who wrote it, why it came about, those types of things. That is not in Digimon, so these prophecies make 0% sense. And
these prophecies are just the writers saying what's going to happen.
Right.
There's no real world origin for any of this stuff.
Right. Although it'd be great if there was.
Yes.
Awesome.
There's a level of thought and attention that's not put into the writing. For things like that, there's things like when Ty's talking about how Mimi's going to join them, he's like, Mimi and her Digimon friends. And it's like...
How does he know about that?
How does he know that?
I wish I knew the thought process behind that statement. Is it the writer is not keeping track of the fact that he doesn't know?
I feel like there must have been multiple writers and they were working on different episodes. That's very much how it feels to me.
Oh, that's true. So if they're writing that episode and don't know, the other episode before it hasn't been finalized, they don't, maybe they thought Mimi was going to say he's going to go, or I'm going to go find friends to join us.
Yeah. Mm.
And yeah, I guess I can totally see that, especially in the, not comparing the editing of this podcast to the creation of Digimon, because it's a huge task in comparison. But I can see how, there'll be plenty of times where I make mistakes, or any of us make mistakes, and while I'm editing, I realize it's wrong, but it's a lot of effort to actually go in and, re-record my voice, make it sound like it's that voice, and, put it in scenes. There are times where it's just we made this mistake, and it's just going to go live, and, people will comment on it, and we'll explain that we know, and...
Yeah.
Or, and so I can totally see that now, it's just, especially with a tight budget and a timeline, and we can get this episode out, we're not going to... Yeah, it's a shame though, because I would think there'd be more of a problem in the original with the episode, having to write the episodes as they're being animated and everything, whereas in the dub you think it would be easier, but probably it had less of a budget.
Well, again, they're also completely different shows. We've talked about that before, how the dub is basically completely different anime.
I guess what I mean is that they should have gotten everything in a more streamlined process. Here are the episodes.
They're working on several things besides Digimon.
Yeah.
They're not going to pay that much attention to a kid's show.
True.
Stupid kid shows.
I can see that. If it's not a passion project, it's we need to put in this much detail.
Yeah. There. I don't know how much a studio has to do in one season, but it's ridiculous. And I am not, I would not say it's a lack of thought. It's just a lack of time, I would say. Right. They cannot prioritize one show over all the others.
Unless we go back in time.
Well, you would have to work on that.
Oh, all these keychains. I want these keychains. Not Goemon. Goemon looks derpy.
Whoa. Who's hating on Goemon?
Jeffrey.
So I was in the JoMoki summary for this episode. It listed differences in the Digimon Adventure PSP game. And apparently, so like, when I've heard that, it's pretty faithful. So I don't know if these are like, there are lots of these differences or if it's just this episode. But Mimi is with the group when this happens. So she gets her Andriki chain. And Angewomon doesn't. So Angewomon and Angemon, or Magna and Angemon fight together. Which is a weird, like, I don't know why they decided to change those.
Because they wanted the angels to fight.
So, wait, which came first? Yeah, which came first?
What?
The anime came first, right?
Oh, no, the game came out, like, a couple years ago.
Oh.
For PSP.
Well, then, that's cool, and I'm glad they made that change. So, obviously, we've got very physical, visual manifestation of depression in episode 51. 51?
51? Bueller?
That's a great movie. And they actually mentioned depression by name a few times, which surprised me. I didn't keep track of that, but I know whoever did the episode recap at the beginning of 52 said that Matt got so depressed he fell into a dark hole or something, and Apocalymon made a couple quips about it, and I'm actually torn about its portrayal here, because I know I personally had not seen it tackled in this way before when I was watching it as a kid. And I feel like, you know, there have been negative energy episodes of, like, Power Rangers or whatever else I was watching at the time, but they never took it as seriously, I think, as this episode tried to. As this episode did. This episode did take it seriously. At the same time, it was resolved so fast.
Yeah.
It also has been building up for a while, and Matt, at least.
And these for me, yeah.
Like, yeah. These aren't questions that have just been brought up in this episode. It's, like, things that have been going on for a while, and then in, like, one little speech, it's like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah. And no, it was it's been building up for a long time with Sora, too. They just got put on the back burner. We haven't seen it. She seems to internalize more than Matt does. He cries a lot more than she does.
Well, it's a show for boys, so you can't actually have the girl take screen time.
Yeah, but, like, you know, she's been dealing with this since at least the Crest of Love. And
I mean, I partially think that representation of, like, things building up and, like, getting into a positive feedback loop, positive feedback loop, for anyone who doesn't know, doesn't mean being positive. It means you have, like, an effect, and then you have a cause, and then the effect makes that cause worse. So it's like you, like, I don't know how to say, you add one, and the effect of adding one adds another one, and you add one, like, it keeps adding up positively. Whereas a negative feedback loop would be something like regulating the temperature of your body, where, like, if it gets too hot, your body makes it cooler, and then if it gets too cold, then it adds. So, like, it's you add one, subtract one, and it stays around zero. But a positive feedback loop is, like, it just keeps spiraling out of control.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like they represent depression, and how it at least jives with my experience with being sad and stuff. And it feels true in that, like, once you just going down this spiral, and then it's like, boom, you snap out of it.
No, see, I don't think that's true. The point, I feel like a lot of shows will spend time showing how people, maybe not a lot of shows, but they'll spend more time showing how people become depressed and the going downward spiral, but it's always the upward spiral is always, like, some inspiring moment, and then you're okay. And I'm like, that's not how it happens.
But I do like that the solution is don't be alone. I do like that. It just, I wish this arc as a whole had taken things a little slower and had more time to do what it was trying to do, especially with this episode.
Ashley, I think your complaint is something you should keep in mind for Tamers. I don't think Tamers does it perfectly, but I think it does a better job than this.
Tamers is the best, so... Tamers is the best!
But see, that annoyed me in Tamers, because I was too little to sympathize. It's like, yeah. I get why they rush through it, but now that I'm older, I'm just like, not quite, guys, not quite.
Not quite. I was going to say that I like how it's portrayed as a actual ball of darkness. I don't know, I feel like this is a thing I've seen more recently of
comics that try to explain depression to people who are mean and just like, just get over it, to people, like, portrays it as a ball of darkness and, you know, stereotypical commercials for antidepressants, I guess. I don't know.
I find it weird how it's really unclear the origin of this smoke monster. I think Matt says that it's came from inside himself, but it's really weird how it, like, then becomes an external entity and then possesses Sora, and it seems to be tied with this, with the cave thing, and it's like, did Matt's emotions really cause, like, this cave to appear?
I was gonna ask how Gabumon didn't notice that, like, how did they enter the cave? I guess. Because Sora just, like, fell in a pit.
I assume they were just, like, going through a mountain or something. They could have just looked at a normal cave and they were just like, we have to get through this place. And also maybe they were finding a place to sleep for the night or something.
So, yeah. So, like, my thoughts on this place are that, like, it could be that the area itself is an area that is highly susceptible to negative emotions and makes them manifest so that the darkness did come from Matt and from Sora. I don't think it was the same depression. I think it was their own separate depressions both manifesting. Mm-hmm. My other thought... Did I finish that first thought?
I think so.
I guess.
Okay, so my other thought is that we've seen possession before. We've seen Light possess Kari. And the Digiverse pretends to be all about balance when it's not. But it could be a similar entity that can only communicate with Matt and Sora, but it's a bad entity that wants them to wallow in their own misery, feeds on it or something. So that's my...
And then wants them to get together.
Apparently. But it can't work on multiple people at once, I think. Because, I mean, the key is don't be alone. The key is you have support, you have friends, so you can work through... I wish they said that they still have to work through it instead of it's just, oh, everything's good now. But, like, yeah, it is your battle that you have to fight. But your friends... And your friends can't fight it for you, but your friends have you. Your friends have you, so...
I wish they hadn't named the episode before this Joe's Battle, and they had named this one Matt's Battle, because... That one before that is really not Joe's Battle.
The one before is, I don't know.
Is we don't...
We don't talk about that episode.
Yeah, we don't talk about it. I mean, in Japanese, it was, like, called, like, Girls Fight or something.
Really?
It was called The Girls Battle Lady Devimon. So I applaud it for, like, de-emphasizing that.
Avoiding that, yeah.
But I find it especially weird to be like...
But then they make it about a dude.
Right, it's like this thing about the girls, and that's focused about the guy.
And it's not even about him. Like,
yeah, it's like totally not about him.
I mean, some of it's about him, but whatever.
There's no main character for that one. I feel like when you're coming up with names for these, it's really hard to... Like, Lady Devimon is the only cornerstone that's introduced in that episode. Otherwise, it's just like, we're apart, and we do want... Like, it's two equally weighted subplots.
Yeah. I was gonna say something. I don't know. I kind of like that they call Joe's search for Matt Joe's battle, because when Joe was in trouble, Matt was the one who digivolved and got the reap the benefit of that. So that's the only part I like about that. I enjoy Joe and Matt's relationship. It sort of comes out of nowhere, but I like that it's there.
Yeah.
Anybody else got anything to say about depression?
I had a couple of things.
Yeah, go for it. This is a good topic.
I like how you guys convinced me that, like, I was thinking that, oh, it is well done how he snaps. So I think there are different things. I think there are certain, depending on the degree of depression, and maybe we should make a distinction between, like, because there's a distinction between having, you can be depressed for, like, a couple days, and that's totally different from being, like, clinically depressed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think the distinction, what I remember from intro to psychology class, is that the distinction is more about thinking that everything is globally defined and permanent. And so, I mean, what I got was that Matt's was a local temporary depression that wasn't really, there weren't many good reasons behind, not that there ever were good reasons, but that it was the kind of thing that he could easily snap out of, instead of something that, the kind of depression that would take lots of work to, consuming work to get over. But I wish it was more that. I wish it was more, less black and white, I guess. But I guess we'll get that in Tamers.
Tamers!
And, I mean, people didn't like that as kids, so I guess there are costs to making it more complex and a harder struggle. I found it weird how Matt left his, harmonica behind and then was reunited with it once Joe came. And I thought it should be the other way around, that, like, he left his harmonica behind as a sign that he was no longer sad?
No, it makes...
Just because it's blues music doesn't mean he's sad.
I guess, but I always thought that was like a sign. I mean, aside from the first episode, where the when Garurumon first appears, every other time he's played it has been like, well, he's only playing it one other time when he's searching for, when he's separated from TK, and he's like, I can't find TK, I can't be with TK.
But I mean, I took it more of a, like, when you're depressed, you don't find the things that you normally find enjoyable. So
yeah. True, yeah, I see your point.
And also, it's like an emblem of who he is. He kind of lost himself.
No, he still had the swan boat. That's who he is.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. How could I forget? Never mind. You are completely correct.
Oh my God.
That swan boat, man.
So for anyone who hasn't watched it recently, what we're talking about is the fact that... Well, so the swan boat...
it didn't even belong to him.
Right, so this Matt travels on a swan boat in this arc. It's off screen, but then they find the swan boat, and they're all like, "Oh, it's Matt's boat." Because in the earlier episodes in the Myotismon arc in the digital world, this swan, like Matt, rides the swan boat across the lake away from TK to Joe, and then I think then rides it later with
rides it with Joe and Ty.
No, he doesn't.
No, Joe and Ty just ride it.
Yeah, Ty and Joe ride it with Mimi.
With Mimi, yes.
So it's not Matt's anyway. All the characters in this episode, or these, I think it's over two episodes in this arc. I think Joe finds the boat and is like, "Oh, it's Matt's boat." And Sora and TK find the boat and like, "Oh, it's Matt's boat." And it's like, why these people who haven't? I guess Sora could have been watching Matt ride the boat, and Joe could have seen Matt come up on the shore with a boat. But even so, how would he still own it? Like, it's so...
Well, I think it's more a sign that someone has been here and used this boat.
So that's clearly what it was written. I haven't checked, but like, that's clearly what makes sense. That it was like, there's a boat here. Someone's traveled here. Let's see if it's Matt.
Yeah.
But in the dub, they're like, kids can't understand this. Let's just say it's Matt's boat.
I mean, by the time we got here, you're like, I forgot that Matt ever used a boat.
Yeah, exactly. He uses it once.
So I accept that this is Matt's boat, whatever.
This is just not possible. Like, how would he retain, if he's just leaving it random places, anybody could take that.
Yeah.
So silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked the talk when... Well, when Sora is depressed and everyone gets her out of it, I liked the one part where they said that it requires energy. It was kind of weird in that it was like uplifting, and it was like, it requires lots of work and energy, and they were like, yay! And it was like, that's kind of, I don't know, it was, I don't know. But I thought it was realistic, even if the music was kind of like making it seem too cheery, but it was like making it seem like the mad thing was just like, oh, snap out of it instantly, whereas they at least tried with that to describe that it's always an uphill battle.
They really liked mentioning going uphill.
Oh, did they say it?
In that episode, right?
They kept saying it about the mountain. You're on a mountain. Like,
you're going up Spiral Mountain.
Right. Joe and Mimi also said
it. Yeah, they both said it. Both.
They keep complaining. They're like, why do we always find ourselves going uphill? And it's like, because you're climbing a mountain. Oh my God. Although the mountain makes no sense. I'm going to talk about this later, but the mountain, oh my God. Anyway.
What did you just do?
I just, I don't know what happened.
Keyboard smashing!
No, that was on Nalf.
It's even better.
So I want to talk about the general splinterings and getting back to, like, the how to describe this? The way the groups splinter and come back together and move, like, all the way the kids move around and stuff. So the beginning of this arc, I think we have one episode at the beginning of this arc before Ty tells Sora and TK to go find everyone, to bring them back to fight Paimon, which I found really weird. It's only been four episodes since they split up, and it's really weird pacing to be like, let's let them go off on their own, and then, like, almost... Like,
yeah.
Four episodes later, be like, they need to come back. And not even of their own volition. It's just like, go find them, bring them back. Like, we need them. And it's like, shouldn't they all have known? Like, it's pretty obvious when a Dark Master has been defeated based on a quarter of the world disappearing. And the only reason that Ty sent them was like, we're fighting Paimon now, we need them. Shouldn't they have realized once the city disappeared that they were going to fight Paimon and they were needed? And yet they're like, we're just gonna keep walking around. Oh, they need me? Okay, let's go.
Well, they also didn't really know where the others were.
There was an obvious meeting point at the top of the mountain.
That's true.
And I get the sense that when they wrote, like, the general structure of this arc, they were like, we want to have them split up and have these certain points, but there's not enough time, so we're kind of hedged in, we don't know. Like, I wonder if maybe they thought they maybe should split up, like, in the Metal Siegemon arc, but then they were like, oh, but that needs to be because of Puppetmon, and
I don't know. It seems like they wanted to have them split up, but then had to really rush it.
I think maybe they thought they'd have more time for this whole arc, and then they didn't.
I think like, the show would go on longer?
Yes.
I don't know about that, because I mean, I guess Pulma, I guess there are shows that have gone on longer than this.
Yeah, it's 54 episodes? That's already kind of irregular.
Pretty weird.
I thought that was, I just think that was like kind of regular in that it's like four seasons in Japanese anime airing.
Wouldn't that be 52?
I don't know if it's exact. I think there's like room for enough variation in that.
I guess there's normally series that are 13 or 14 episodes.
Yes.
So I'm looking at Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, which was 64 episodes.
Well, wasn't that one?
Yeah, that's also strange.
Irregular. Yeah, like that one was irregular because they were like, okay, we're doing this anime right, regardless of season
of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really confused when I watched that as it aired, because got to around episode 54 or something, and I was like, it's about to end. This is going to be a crazy last episode. Wait, it's not over? The next one's going to be, oh, it's not, okay. Like, there would be 10 episodes where I was like, this is the end. Oh, no.
Wow.
That was kind of stupid, I guess.
Did you not read the manga?
I hadn't read the manga that far. The manga, I'm pretty sure the end of Brotherhood was before the end of the manga.
Was it?
Did it have the same ending?
I think they, like, planned it so it would be the same thing, but I mean,
It wasn't exactly the same.
Oh, did you read?
Yeah.
So the end of the manga was June 12th, 2010, and the end of the series was July 4th, 2010. Oh, okay. But that means that they obviously weren't waiting for it to come out. I forget how we got on that. I touched on this before, but it was weird how they let these characters go off on their own to find themselves or to do what they wanted, and then it's like, okay, come back in.
Yeah.
And especially because Ty is like, I believe in you, Matt. I knew you'd come back after I sent for you to come back. Is he really trusting in him? If
Matt didn't know he needed him right then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the power of their love.
Yes.
Friendship.
Everything okay. Yeah, friendship, sure. I nuzzle my friends all the time.
Yeah, Ash and I nuzzled all the time in college.
Okay, this is getting weird.
For the record, no, we didn't. Just for our listeners, we was not that kind of college.
Okay. Joe splitting from Mimi, I did not remember. So, like, when I saw it happen, I was like, what? Why is this happening? And then I was like, oh, actually, it's just his reason is surprisingly convincing to me.
Really?
You know, it's something that, like, I've even gone through recently where it's, like, you being part of a team, you, like, associate your self-worth with the team and not with yourself anymore. And then you start to feel like that you yourself are an important factor. And that's, like, a pretty complex thing to be struggling with. Especially for a show that's all about, like, friendship, teamwork. I feel like it's kind of, after he gives that explanation, it's never really explored again, though. And if anything, what did he succeed in? He succeeded in finding Matt. Ooh, he's so cool. He found Matt. Like, that's not really achieving anything on his own. The whole show is about the Digimon fighting for the humans. Like, none of the characters have really done anything on their own. They've had the Digimon do stuff for them.
Ty punched someone with a brain once.
With a what?
With a crane. Punched Andromon with a
crane.
Oh,
yeah, in the very beginning.
Yeah. Nice.
And then he was a good guy, so.
Yeah.
So he regretted it.
Did he, though? I don't think he did.
Yeah, probably not.
It's also weird how Joe is the one who wants to go off on his own to, you know, like, prove to himself that he can do things himself. And then he immediately meets up with people and then is together with everyone. And Mimi stays off on her own for a while.
Yeah. Well, she had her army.
Yeah. I feel like Mimi had a lot of development off screen where she went from being like, get me stuff, to being all like, I'm not the one uncomfortable. You guys are uncomfortable.
See, for me, I feel like it's just we had less of the stupid dub things that they right. put in for Mimi. And she was like that all along, really, which is why she had purity, sincerity going on.
True. Like, I feel like they, at the point where she's leading this army, they had to struggle to be like, I'm just a girl. I'm just a silly. Especially in the, we'll talk about it later, but there is some dubbing difference with the her army getting her soda and stuff. Anyway.
Of course there are.
It was also weird the way they treated Mimi waiting for her for that fight, where they're like, oh, Matt's here. Okay, we're all here. Cool, let's start.
That's what I was so confused. Like, nobody cares that Mimi is not here.
Yeah.
I feel so conflicted about that because I'm like, shouldn't they care that Mimi's there? But also, yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, Lilymon couldn't help out that much. Like, where Metal Gurumon is the real thing they're waiting for. So it makes sense, but it's also weird they don't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
But it's like, the story wants to have this, like, we're all needed and this lovey-dovey kind of feeling. And then once Mimi brings her army, they do so little. Like,
No, I actually liked her army. They took care of a very serious threat that the kids could not have done on their own.
What did they take care of?
The Vilemon.
That's what I'm confused about, because it seemed like the Vilemon were mostly destroyed by Magna Angemon, and that the Ultimates, I can't remember what the her army did, but the Ultimates were like head-to-head with Paimon, like countering each of his attacks, which I was like, this would not happen. They were not able to do this a second ago. I wish WarGreymon, Metal Gurumon, and Magna Angemon had been the ones, and maybe Angewomon, had been the ones fighting Paimon, and the rest of everyone had been fighting the Vilemon. But it seemed like most people were attacking Paimon, and the Vilemon were like caught up in Magna Angemon's thing. I guess I missed that the army was fighting the Vilemon.
The army was fighting the Vilemon. But see, I think what happened with Paimon is everybody was fighting him, and that's why they could land hits now, because he didn't have time to dodge everyone. Before, he was only fighting a couple of them at a time.
Yeah, that's true.
Teamwork wins! Yay! We're all in this together!
They could have been doing that from the start. I guess they learned that, though, over the course of... They lost once by just fighting with the two linchpins, and then regrouped, and then fought as a team. So, I guess there's a lesson.
Okay, so growing up, initially my thoughts were that this wasn't a great portrayal of growing up, but I, in the course of listening to you guys talk for like an hour, I was like, you know what? No, it's actually a great portrayal of growing up, because they learn all the good things of growing up, like, you know, having confidence and teamwork and somewhat manipulation that's okay and all these things. But they get to retain the fun things of childhood eventually, now that they're going home. Yeah, they are
still kids. They're at most 12.
Wouldn't it be cool if it was... now I'm just inviting more fans. I'm just writing fanfiction in my head.
Let's do it.
Do it.
They've probably grown up over the course of the series more than is socially acceptable in society. And seeing them go back, they wouldn't really have, not like PTSD, but I mean, fitting back into society with how they've changed and what they've learned would be interesting.
I wish we'd seen more of that, yeah.
They seem okay in Ventura 2, though, right?
Well, that's
they do.
Several years later. And...
It's, yeah, 3 or 4 years later, depending on what watching. Right. But, yeah, no, it would have been cool to see the adjustment. We saw a bit of it in Home Away From Home, yeah.
Well, I was thinking of when they're in the bus after they all come to Japan, and Tai says that stupid line where he says that he thought the teacher was an evil Digimon.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he had a really stupid line.
He's like, I thought he was using his homework blaster attack, and then the teacher pounced or whatever it is. It's so unclear. Also behind him, yeah. Which is Fujiyama.
Mr. Fujiyama, and he's like, what about my tickle blaster attack? It was very weird.
What?
It was
a really weird moment. Maybe I just blocked this from my mind.
It was a very strange moment on the bus.
Yeah. I don't know, they've learned how to survive on their own, but wouldn't have to employ that anymore at home. So I guess that could be a hard adjustment, or it could be an awesome adjustment. It's up for grabs.
Well, Tai does know how to cook better, thank you, Matt.
Yes.
Yes.
Except Kari will probably still, like, wait on him or something.
Yeah, probably.
I feel like Kari didn't grow up at all, actually.
She didn't have a chance to. She was in the Digimon world for, like, 3 days or something.
She's also possibly. Just... She already has the soul of, like, a 30-year-old or something.
Not even. She's not human. I don't know.
She has the soul of a, like, 70-year-old lady.
She has the soul of an immortal angel. I don't know, man. How do saints work? I don't know anything about saints.
How do saints work?
Yeah, they're just good all the time. I guess that is Kari. Kari is a saint.
And they perform miracles, right? And they get possessed by things and have visions. Like, yeah.
Okay, that's not how saints work.
That's not how saints... You lost me at the end.
That's not how it happens?
Saints are normal people who have been, after they're dead, have been, what is the term, like, brought into sainthood.
Canonized.
Yeah.
But wasn't Joan of Arc a saint? She had visions.
I don't know if she was a saint.
And to be canonized, you need to have documented proof of miracles that happened around you.
Oh, so what about, like, the previous popes that have been turned into saints? Like, what have they done?
I don't know. I'm Jewish!
Why do you know all this stuff?
Because when I was taking Spanish literature, we had to watch something about they were trying to get this little girl canonized after she died. I don't know. I feel like if they haven't grown a lot, they have definitely grown noticeably. Some more than others.
TK still is a child.
TK's still TK, yeah.
But he had his like responsibility of protecting Kari and that Sora gave him in episode 51. Yes, 51.
And at the end.
Which I thought was weird.
I mean, on the one hand, she's keeping him out of danger, sort of. Like, that's a tactic I've seen used in a lot of literature, where, you know, an adult will be like, okay, spunky little kid, you protect this other little kid.
Yeah.
All right? This is a very important duty, but you have to stay here, where it's safe to do it. It's, you know, it's... preserves the kid's pride. You know, it's still, you know, leaving the kid there. And it's, you know, got the stupid gender thing attached to it.
Has a stupid gender thing attached to it. I like that Piedmon shipped them at the end. He was like, sounds like you're falling for each other when he cuts the rope. And I was like, wow, make it more explicit, please.
Right? But they are never explicitly said to have gotten together. It's very...
Oh my goodness. It's so obvious, it's very... though.
I know, but at the same time, like, there's, it's just, it never happens, which is, well, I mean, on a level, it's really disappointing to me, because I enjoy my ships, but it's also nice to have when you have people that are very close and compatible and just decide not to maybe have a relationship, I don't know.
They're almost too compatible, though.
They're both angels. They're like the same person.
It's like brother and sister, though.
It could be. Especially if Matt and Ty got married.
Those angels are not brother and sister, please.
I like how we just ignore the fact that Ash just said that Ty and Matt should get married.
Oh, is that what you said?
That is what I said.
I agree.
I think Matt and Ty and Sora, I think they should all just marry one another, you know? Just have, like, except for the ones who are related. So let's just leave TK and Kari out of it.
But if we want it to be a popular anime nowadays, it needs to have incest.
Well, what?
Yeah, that's a thing.
There were, of the anime airing this season, like, several of them, not explicit incest, but, like, a lot of, like, guy and sister.
This is not a recent thing, Jeff. This has been going on for a long time.
Right, I'm saying, like, it seems like it is being, especially the dynamic of, like, older brother, little sister.
Ciscon is a thing.
Right, but it seems like it's being more popular.
That's really weird.
I don't watch those anime.
It's even in places where you don't really expect
it. Didn't you just watch Utena?
Wait, is it going to be in Utena?
Yeah. I've heard that there's incest in Utena.
I don't know.
Ash, why don't you warn me about these things?
I was hoping it wasn't in the actual anime. It's definitely in the movie.
Okay, well, Jeff doesn't know that much, so maybe
Oh, wait, I forgot. Oh, the twins, too.
What have you gotten me into?
Oh, no. But yeah, no. It's totally a thing in a lot of anime. Even anime I like.
We don't need that in our Digimon.
That's the thing. It's just like there are things about gender representation in Digimon that dislike and wish could imagine didn't happen. There are decent shows where it's like, let's just pretend this part didn't happen and the rest of it is really interesting and pretty good.
Yeah. What are you talking about? What show are you talking about?
Well, there's some weird stuff in, I mean, in general, I mean, thinking like, yeah, there's some weird stuff in Mawaru Penguin Drum.
Oh, man, no, it's really blatant in Mawaru Penguin Drum.
Okay, what I'm saying is weird is that it's, I forget who is actually related to whom by the end, so.
That's true.
Like, I don't think anyone's actually related except for, I don't know.
It's still weird.
Right, yeah, it's still weird because they're supposed to, like, they're acting like they're siblings.
Yeah.
And in shows that are airing now, like, No Game No Life is really interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting, but it's just, like, it's not overt. What is the word I'm looking for? What is the obvious word? What are we talking about?
Incest.
Yes. And it's not overt. It's just, it's like the guy and his little sister are just way too close.
Yeah.
And he just, like, sits in his lap all the time. And
No.
Yeah. And there's also, I forget what the full Japanese name is, but the irregular at Magic High School, which I watched, like, the first couple episodes of, and it's just painful to watch because it's just this main guy who's just, like, so brilliant and so amazing at everything, and his sister's way too into him.
I know last time we talked about, Jeff mentioned that it was odd that this time we had a team up of bad guys of you know, sort of equal power, sort of working together instead of, you know, like Myotismon's army or Devimon's controlled spire people, black gear people. But the core of our heroes has always been friendship and teamwork and how friendship overcomes evil. And with the splitting up that happened here, where they were weak, they overcame that by coming together. Matt and Joe helped Sora by coming together. Gabumon helped Matt for several episodes now by remaining at his side and reminding him that he is not alone and will never be alone. And I really like how the teamwork is coming together now. In these last few episodes, when they finally meet up again, like, they are basically impossible to beat. Even the end of the world and deleting them so that they don't even exist anymore did not keep them down because they shared their strength. And I really liked that. I really liked moments like when Gomamon was left behind with Sora and he spoke directly to Sora and not to his partner because Joe wasn't there.
I wish we had gotten more. I feel like it was just Sora and Gomamon that this happened to. I wish we had gotten more people interacting with other Digimon that aren't their own partners.
I agree. We've had a little of it throughout the series, like when Gabumon kept TK warm in episode 3.
That was the only other thing I could think of.
I mean, yeah, we've gotten plenty of... Well, it's this weird... I feel like it sets up as a weird social dynamic where you have these 14 characters, I guess 16 now, characters, and most, like the 8 of them only really interact with a particular person each. It's weird, and it's like, I feel like maybe it portrays friendship in a weird way where like you, I'm just thinking like in college and high school, I had friend groups where we'd have a ton of people in the group, and I wasn't comfortable having a one-on-one lengthy conversation with certain people in the group. Like, I wish I were, but like...
That's normal.
I guess that's normal. I'm not saying it's abnormal, but I don't think it's optimal. It seems really... It always seemed weird to me, and I wish that I, like... Because it feels weird to be you consider those people friends and then, like, not be able to have, like, a one-on-one conversation with them. Like, that's what I think...
There are differing levels of closeness to people.
Right. I just feel like that's what's weird about having so many characters, that these 16 people were all, like, you know, like, in real close proximity to each other for so long, and yet there are relationships that are just, like, non-existent, basically. And I don't know if it gets any better in Tamers when there are only 3 main characters.
I feel like I disagree with that. That you're talking about the human kids, right?
No, I'm talking about, like, Patamon and Mini's relationship, or Gomamon and Tai's relationship.
Okay, never mind, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
No, there's definitely... I definitely think all the links in the 7 or 8 kids between any 2 of the 7 or 8 kids has probably been at least, you know, like, shown at least once and somewhat fleshed out, but not between all of the human Digimon pairings.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's... If you're only looking at... If you're ignoring Kari, that's 49 different relationships between humans and Digimon, and 64 if you include Kari, so... It's a lot of relationships to show.
You just blew my mind.
I mean, of those, like, 7 of the 49 are the ones that we see all the time, and 8 of the 64 are the ones we see all the time, so.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't do a good job explaining these numbers here, so quick clarification. If you're counting relationships between human and Digimon, there are 8 humans, 8 Digimon, so there are 64 different combinations. If you're counting all of the relationships in the entire show, there are 16 characters. If you're counting the main characters, obviously. 16 characters, but it's not as easy as 16 times 16. It's actually 16 times 15. So you're choosing the first person to consider, choosing the second person to consider, and there are 15 choices after you've chosen one of them. And the whole thing divided by 2, because you don't want to double count. You know, like if you count Mimi's relationship with Tai, and you also count Tai's relationship with Mimi, that's double counting, so you divide by 2. So that's 16 times 15 divided by 2 is 120 different relationships in the show. 64 of them are human to Digimon. Yeah, that's 120 relationships for a children's show meant for people who are like 8 years old. That's a little insane. I am also really curious which of those 120 relationships are actually fleshed out.
I guess there's a difference here where the Digimon, I've mentioned this before, where the Digimon are kind of part of their kid. They are a separate entity, but they're also, you know, undeniably together as a unit.
Right.
Like, it does feel strange when the Digimon talk to other humans.
This is what I like about the smaller cast of Tamers, where it can focus on... I'm actually really curious going into it now, because I don't remember if, when they have only 3 or 4 characters, if like, Terriermon has a relationship with Takato. I feel like they do.
I think it depends on the Digimon. Because Terriermon's very friendly. And I think he did have...
I feel like Renamon had a relationship with Takato, or Giyomon had a relationship with Rika.
Yeah. Well, even then, though, there's a sort of difference where, you know, Tai actually kind of has a relationship with all the other, with some of the other Digimon. Like, he's talked to Tokomon on Tokomon's own, and talked to... Who else is... I don't know. Some other ones.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, there are two almost extremes where, like, Tamers is, you have a sort of minimal cast, you can flesh out all relationships. And Frontier, you just merge the human with the Digimon. And I feel like this is a weird middle ground.
Yeah.
According to Andrew, 02 does a better job interacting with everyone.
That's true. O2 does do a better job with that.
My memories of O2 are so hazy.
But it is a slightly smaller cast. Main cast.
It's weird because it's a smaller main cast, but also with a side cast, too.
Yes, a big side cast.
Big.
Also, is the main cast that much smaller? Because you still have, six.
It's five.
Well, with Ken.
With Ken, it's six. Spoilers!
Spoilers!
You didn't do it right, actually.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. You have to like, take pleasure in it.
Spoilers. Did I do it right now?
Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So, they have teamwork, but we don't... I don't know.
I wish we could have seen more of it.
They're not a very good team still.
Well, they are the best team they've been. By the end. When
they're not the best team they could be.
Well, they got, they do well later on, season two.
A whole 54 other episodes.
yeah, they come through.
Man, I can't wait for season two.
I can't wait for Tamers.
I can't wait for something that's not this season, pretty much.
I mean, season two is still plagued.
For me, it's just that I rewatched this one 2 years ago, and I haven't seen 02 in 7 years, so
I'm excited to get something new. I watched the World Tour a lot.
Why? World Tour's...
Because that's what I have recorded on video. On video cassette. I am 24.
I'm excited for season two because I was actually in on the Digimon hype by then. I was on that hype train.
I think you mean hype Lokomon. Lokomon.
Lokomon wasn't there yet.
I was actually traveling during the world tour.
Where were you?
But I was not around the world. I was in Mississippi. The only things I had to say about teamwork were that there was one line in particular I thought was really weird where I thought you guys were going to mention it, or Ash was going to mention it, was that Tai at some point tells Izzy to have everyone digivolve, which is like a weird delegation of commands.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know, Tai wasn't doing so well when it was just him, Izzy, Kari, and Wargreymon was fighting Piedmon, and he was being equally...
His reasoning was... never mind. No, I can't defend his reasoning. It was stupid. He should have let Izzy fight. I mean, I can understand him... I can understand Kari not fighting, because she'd just taken down Lady Devimon with Anja Woman.
I like his reasoning for saying that Agumon should be in reserve, but not much else.
Yeah, and even then wasn't...
I guess it set up the Metal Garurumon nuzzling Wargreymon. Are we going to gender?
God, gender. Are we
gender.
The wonderful gender dynamics of this arc.
Way to end the show.
Yeah, episode 50 was just the epitome of everything wrong with gender in the show.
Because,
you know, when we said we wanted more female Digimon, Lady Devimon versus Angewomon wasn't exactly what we meant. It's not really what we were going for.
The opposite of what we mentioned, that female Digimon that are not defined by their feminine, by their gender. And that's exactly what this fight embodies.
Yeah. Let's see. Can we name all the instances of bad in it? Let's see. There's lots of blonde jokes.
Hair pulling.
Which at least Angewomon is blonde.
Yeah, but it's still, you don't make, like, blonde jokes to blonde people are still derogatory towards blonde people.
I don't find it offensive because it's derogatory. I find it offensive. No, I find it bad because it's, like, so superficial and stupid and unrelated to anything. And, like, why would Digimon have the same... It's not even... It's the societal...
Most Digimon don't even have hair, yeah.
Right. It's societal understanding. It's not even, like, correlated with hair color. It's our societal understanding and perception.
Yeah, okay, there's that. And then what else is there? Yes, hair pulling is what Ash was trying to say earlier.
nail breaking.
Yeah, the nail break. They also have a slap fight, right? They slap each other in the face.
They do. Sora and Kari have a weird jealous moment that I didn't appreciate.
Whoa, wait, I don't even remember this. Please tell me.
When she first shows up, Kari and Sora just get this look on their face.
Really?
It's when she says you're a witch, or she's a witch.
Yeah, I didn't take that as jealous. I was just like, Kari, do you know what a witch looks like? Like, it's not...
Well, it's kind of like, well, what basis do they have? For having more anger, the two females present, making a more annoyed face at the female Digimon that just showed up.
It wasn't so much the dialogue, I thought. It was the face they made, which I think the dub tried to cover that up and kind of like was like they couldn't do it. They did a bad job. They did a really bad job.
Yeah.
In the Japanese, I rewatched that segment, and it's not that clear what the difference is, but it seems that Lady Devimon says something along the lines of, like, I can't remember the exact line, but she refers to the group as boys. I think she even says, like, boyatachi, which I didn't even know you could say. I think that's just, like, boy plural.
Yeah, that's what that is.
The Digimon Wiki for this episode says that Kari in Japanese says bitch, which was not true, at least according to the Netflix subtitles. I don't know how true that, you know, like, how accurate that translation was, and I wish I had written down what word she actually uses. But at least the context was more like why... It wasn't much jealous, it was more like angry at her for being a witch.
Why is she ignoring the girls?
Right, also seducing the guys.
Yeah.
I'm impression of, but like, yeah. She's like, hi guys, and they're like... Yeah. What is she doing? Which is still weird. They made it so much weirder to cover it up.
Yeah. Oh, and then there was that really weird moment where, I forget who, I think it was Izzy. It always falls on Izzy, and that makes
me... Oh,
weird.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Izzy, but Izzy was like, I know I shouldn't be watching this, but I can't tear my eyes away or something.
Yeah.
I didn't write it down. I was like, oh, Izzy, no. You're, no. First of all, you're 10.
Yeah. I definitely was like, Izzy, why did you say this? Oh, Izzy.
It was really unfortunate.
It's also just reinforcing the, like, it's trying to have it both ways. Like, you as an audience are also like, I shouldn't be watching this, but I am because it's being animated for me and presented to me, like...
I don't think that's what it was going for at all.
No?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I kind of got that. I agree with Ashley.
I think it was going for the base sexist thing that it was doing. Like, it wasn't having a commentary about the animation and the fact that you have to watch it because it's been animated for you. I think it was just going for the, like, that's a thing that is commonly said in the situations. And it's like a... Feels like a private moment that girls should just be, like, you know, like, in their I don't know how to describe it. It's extremely sexist, and it's not putting justice to this. Doing justice. But,
putting justice.
It feels like the kind of thing that... I'm trying to understand why this is a thing commonly said by guys in such situations, and it's because it seems like it's a thing just for girls, and there's this, like, secret pleasure taken by guys to watch it, because it's like, oh, the girls are so hot, and they're, like, fingering each other, and, like, it turns me on so much. Like, that's what's super creepy about it, is that it's a sexist thing, it's a sexual thing.
Yeah.
Right, but that, it extends to the male audience in that way. It's like, you should also not be watching this, but you are... Like, there is a form of voyeurism in that line.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's what I was getting at when you say voyeurism.
Yeah, you're both kind of saying the same thing, you just...
But I'm just wondering if it is actually telling the audience, like, you shouldn't watch stuff like this? That's the leap I think you're taking that I don't agree
No, with. Okay, it's not, like, literally being, like, it's acknowledging your discomfort of, like, I know that this is possibly wrong.
But it's wrong.
But they're
saying the kind of wrong that they're acknowledging is not the right kind of wrong. The kind of wrong it's acknowledging is that, like, you're watching this in public as opposed to, like, a private thing. Is at least when I hear that in general terms. I mean, it's different because it's Digimon, so it's not like they're going to have this fight in a bathroom or something. But, like, when I hear this, I can't think of specific examples, but I'm sure I've seen this in plenty of TV and films where it's like, you know, women having some kind of play like this, and guys like, I can't help but watch. And
yeah,
it's the fact that like this is supposed to be a private thing, and the guy is stumbling on it, and it's like they're not supposed to be watching it, but they take so much pleasure out of it.
I'm not sure the deal is that it's supposed to be a private thing so much that it's a fantasy to see girls perpetuating violence upon each other.
Like, I'm confused because there's no way that this battle was ever conceived as a private thing.
And I don't see a reason for girls' fights in particular to be private things as opposed to boys' fights.
Yeah.
There is definitely a stigma.
I don't think privacy is really the thing I'm going for. I don't think I really mean privacy as much as, like, I'm not saying that it's, like, two girls fighting publicly when they should be saying it's private. I guess what I'm just saying is that it's like taking pleasure in two people fighting, so absorbed in the fight that they are not aware of that they're being watched. And that's the kind of thing that like guys take pleasure in, that they're like so absorbed they're not aware they're being watched, and that they're like, that girls who are normally much more respectful and proper will like show their like, I don't know, go crazy, and that's the kind of thing that they wouldn't do normally.
I really lost Jeff's thoughts here.
I'm trying to articulate that.
I think we're all trying to articulate the same thing.
But, like, Ash and I are agreeing, and Jeff isn't.
I still disagree that it's, like, I don't think the show is saying, I don't think the line is saying, when they acknowledge it as wrong, they're acknowledging that it's wrong for boys to watch it, not that it's wrong for it to happen. And we all agree it's bad that it happens, not that it's wrong for boys to watch it.
I mean, I would say it's more okay for it to happen than for boys to be like, I get off on watching it, like...
Okay, but I mean, I guess when you only have maybe, like, three female Digimon in the entire season for one of them to only exist for a slap fight, that's the kind of thing that...
There were at least... Wait, let's count how many we have.
Okay, female villain Digimon. There's Dokugumon, Gatomon, Legadevimon. Can't think of any others.
Yes. Well, there's Floramon, but not a villain. She was kind of not. It's just, like, a thing that exists.
At least the Gatomon.
Yeah,
he did say Gatomon.
Gatomon.
Actually, that's racist.
It's not racist.
You're racist.
It's racist for you to think it's racist, actually.
You're racist. You're racist for calling me racist for saying that you're racist.
Okay.
You're e-racist because you want to erase my work.
I do not.
The sad thing is this is like a conversation that actually happens on the internet in all seriousness.
What, like, you're racist because I'm racist?
Yep.
It doesn't go more than two layers deep.
This is a conversation that actually happens on the internet.
Yeah, it really is, though. Oh, internet. Stop taking yourself seriously. Yeah, well, okay, Jeff, we'll agree to maybe agree or disagree, perhaps when we find the right English words to describe what we mean.
I don't know what, yeah, I don't know what the thesis of what I'm trying to argue is.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Just that we both agree that that line is wrong, but I think you think that it's like the show trying to acknowledge that it's wrong, and I really don't think that it is doing that. I don't think they even considered that it's wrong.
It's not necessarily saying that it's wrong. It is acknowledging that as an audience, there is a gut reaction to be like, oh, I take pleasure in this, but there's like a lingering doubt that it's wrong. And it's saying like, I know that you feel this is wrong, but really it's kind of okay because we've all acknowledged it and now the moment has passed. There, that's okay. That's more what I'm trying to say.
I agree with that. But I agree with that, and I still insist that they do not seem to have considered the way that it is actually wrong, fundamentally.
Well, yes, no.
Yeah, they think it's wrong because the boys aren't enjoying it, as opposed to wrong because this is how women are only portrayed.
Yes, you could have fought cooler, Angelwoman. You only busted out an arrow at the very end.
Actually, no, I think she did try to use a different arrow attack earlier on.
Did she?
Because I remember having that question. But yeah, in the end, she just used one attack and that defeated her. Like, it could not be. I mean, that's a testament to how the fights in Adventure generally go. That it's generally just one, like, you know, they may take some time setting up, but then it's just one attack that defeats them. But yeah, it's really frustrating. It's like, you could just use that attack.
Why did the first arrow attack fail?
I really can't remember. I'm not 100% sure what happened. I was just so turned on by the fight that I, like...
Yeah, you just stopped
it. I passed out. I had a nosebleed.
Oh, God.
Okay, a bit of a clarification here. For a while in that discussion, I was trying to dig into why there's a sense of guilt about watching two women fight like this, explaining Izzy's line. And I kept talking about the fact that it was a fight that should have been private that was public instead, and I think that was totally ridiculous. I think about it a bit more. It's more to do with guilt that the fight is happening. In the typical scenario, we have a guy stumbling across two women fighting. The implication is that the guy feels guilty that he's not separating them and splitting up the fight and helping them. And so it's a little bit weird in this scenario because Ashley was talking about how Izzy's line kind of stands in for the audience's reaction, but the audience can't intervene and Izzy couldn't intervene. But I now feel like it's even more misogynistic than we originally realized once you take into account that underlying motivation to the line, because this is one of the few scenarios where we had two female Digimon fighting, and it becomes about a guy wanting to separate them. And, you know, like, the idea of two female Digimon fighting is this weirdly fetished but taboo thing that is about men's pleasure, and if it's not, if the man isn't enjoying it, then it shouldn't happen. And that's super weird and has lots of really bad implications. The more I think about this, the more I hate this part of the show.
Well, in the same episode, Joe and Mimi had plenty of moments that I also disagreed with.
That whole episode was a mess.
Yeah. If you keep trying, you were like, the stuff about manhood and Joe in the previous episodes was all just stupid, jokey stuff. But, like, it's very prominent throughout this entire episode. And I'm just like...
The one thing I'm thinking of is the line when they leave for the digital world.
Right.
That was totally jokey and stupid, and I don't want to remember it happening.
But it's still a continuum of, like...
I don't think Joe's struggle in this episode, in this arc is about manhood at all. I don't think they ever use the word manhood.
I think there's some manhood problems in it, inherent in it, that he has to go find his own path. And also, like, the fact that the only reason he wasn't doing it before was because he thought he had to take care of Mimi. It's also the only reason he went with
Mimi.
Is that, did he just say that that's why he's leaving?
Yeah, he left to take care of Mimi. And yeah. when he left her, he was like, you've got lots of friends to take care of you now. So
I mean, so okay, so that is a bit repressive in those desires, but Mimi shouldn't, well, I guess Joe is off on his own, so it's not that big of a deal for her to be off on her own. She has Palmon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, why is it different for, like, Matt? It's okay for him to go
well,
off
he,
on
he
his
has
own.
A mega
and, okay.
form.
Yes, okay, I was going to say, he has a mega form.
But Joe
okay,
doesn't.
But Joe does not, yes.
The other thing that maybe makes it okay, but doesn't really, is that Mimi doesn't want to fight, mm-hmm. and Joe knows that.
True, so she's on her own, she really can't defeat
Although,
herself.
They had, by that point, already both decided to fight, so I don't
know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just there. I can't justify it. Joe, you disappoint me.
Yeah, I mean, so I think in this situation specifically, it is one of these problems that I feel like we encounter a lot when we talk about the show, is that given the scenario that exists, I can't really blame the characters for having these actions, but the show could have designed you can design any scenario. You don't need to design a scenario such that a woman needs to be protected.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And just everybody started treating her like princess again, sort of. And I was very confused by that, actually.
Well, it was really jarring because, like, in that previous arc, she's like, don't call me princess. And then they're like, Princess Mimi. And it's like, okay, let's forget that happened.
Yeah.
And yeah, so in Japanese, I think the bit we're going to be talking about is the time before Joe splits off when she collapses and is like, I don't want to walk anymore or something. And then everyone else is like, all the other, I guess the, what are they, Gekkoman and...
Otamamon.
They're like, let's go get you some food. And she's like, in the dub, she says something like, oh, get me a chili cheeseburger or chili dog or something.
Yeah.
And, but in the Japanese, she says like, no, you don't have to do that. Please don't. And they insist.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's really weird how they go off into the forest and come back with, like, packaged food. But
yeah.
That's another
story.
Well,
I figured they found one of those, like, vending refrigerator things. Yeah.
Oh. You know, maybe they were actually parallel Digidestined that they mugged.
I like that.
What? Oh,
well, okay, gender. I found it kind of annoying that Sora needed so much help to get out of her blackness when Matt didn't.
It was more time pressure, but again, it's a thing that, like, I'm giving in-story justifications, and the story could have been written in a way that showed her being badass and getting out on her own.
Yeah.
In the same way that Matt was.
Yeah. And, like, I feel like that's kind of counterintuitive, because Matt was the one who was having friendship crises, And Sora was like, oh my god, everything is on my shoulders. If we don't win, yeah, we're gonna die. And then, like, they just tell her, you're the only one who can do it. And I was like, what? How is that supposed to help?
Yeah. I just want to say I love that, like, Sora falls into a dark pit. TK's standing there being like, oh no, Sora. Then he sees Matt.
He's like, Matt!
Him and Matt have a whole conversation. And then finally TK's like, oh, by the way, Sora fell down those...
Yeah.
It's his brother. Yeah. You don't understand what it's like to be a brother.
I think the appropriate response was, oh, Matt, good, you're here. Can you go help Sora? Like, but no.
Appropriate responses in Digimon?
Yeah, well, that was, I know, crazy.
More like Lamora.
Wow.
No.
So there are two things in particular, mechanic-wise, I want to talk about this arc. First one is, I can't remember if we touched on this actually, about, no, I don't think we have, that it comes across to me as really cheap storytelling to have lots of bad stuff happen that's all reset once a villain dies. It just frustrates me because it's a very cheap and easy way to artificially raise the stakes. It's like, look at all this terrible stuff that's happened. But as long as you, like, but it still keeps everything as simple as you just need to kill this one guy. And then once you do that, everything else will reset. And it's like introducing all these real world terrible things, like characters dying, the world falling apart, you know, Digimon turning into keychains or whatever. And it's like just, I mean, I guess that was, they cured on their own without having to defeat Paimon. But the world and the Digimon dying and the, particularly like the Spiral Mountain being formed, it's just like the actual problem of reconfiguring the digital world so that it's not all stuck into Spiral Mountain is a really hard problem. And I understand that the show can't focus on that. It can't be like, how are we going to reconstruct the digital world? It just frustrates me because it's like they set up this monumental task of like the whole world has been reconfigured and everything's different. Just kill this one guy. Like, it's a form of having its cake and eating it too. Mm. Eating it too. Mm-hmm. I just don't know. I just wish it could be more. Like, I'm going to compare everything to Tamers, but Tamers, in a lot of ways, like, has actual consequence to the stuff that happens. Like, the stuff that happens to, and I can't remember her name, Terry, is that her name? No.
Jerry.
Okay. The stuff that happens to Jerry is not just reset once they defeat the bad guy. Like, there are real scars, and I don't know. The show, I guess, isn't going for that kind of complexity, but it just feels so... We refer to, like, this arc as being, or the whole Dark Masters arc as being so dark and depressing. It's like, it really isn't, though, because you can just reset everything at the end.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't negate your going through the...
doesn't negate the current darkness
thing, yeah.
I guess, I mean, I don't so much mind resetting things. What I mind is the ease of resetting it.
I don't know. I've mentioned this last time, but I don't really feel like even reset, it's not like everything will go back to the way it was. It's just...
Right. Everything still happened. Like, they'll presumably still remember dying, and that'll still be traumatic.
And also, just like, it won't be the same. Like,
yeah,
everything will be put differently.
I thought you were saying you don't like it because it, like, gives the kids an easy out of something. Like, they didn't learn anything.
Yeah, that is.
Well, I don't think it's that. It's more what Ash was saying of, like, maybe it gives the people who actually experience the most traumatic things, like death, it's not really a consequence so much for them or something.
Mm-hmm. I don't follow.
Like, if you die and just come back, it's like in a video game. There's not much of a consequence if you have unlimited lives and spawn each time.
What about that? You're saying that's what you got to, what you took away?
So it's more of a, it's like, that's more of the resetting thing. But for the kids, it's not, doesn't really, the fact that everything resets doesn't change anything for the kids to me.
Okay, what I don't, some, I guess I framed it poorly by talking about resetting. Because I'm not really talking about the Digimon coming back to life, because that's like something they can never control. But the, like, they present this world that is, like, so drastically different. Like, everything has changed. And the task, like, the real world in such situations where, like, getting back to normal is, like, a huge task. And instead, in the show, they can just focus on destroying the bad guy. And that destroying that bad guy will, you know, like, everything else will follow from that. Like, all this stuff, all the drastic things that have changed, the whole world being reformed, and that'll just fix itself.
And it's not just in Digimon, it's in a lot of things. And for some reason, my mind keeps going to Kingdom Hearts. Probably because I should just play Kingdom Hearts because I really want to play Kingdom Hearts. But that's
the original? What?
Yeah, in the original Kingdom Hearts 1. Well, I think we had Kingdom Hearts 1.5 Remix and I just haven't played it yet. Anyway, in the original Kingdom Hearts, there's a very similar thing where it's like worlds have been destroyed and I can't remember exactly. It's been a while now. But like, I'm pretty sure they describe it as like, worlds have been destroyed and all you need to do is defeat the bad guy. And he's the one who caused the worlds to be destroyed. But for some reason, defeating him will also bring them back. And it's like, why? Ugh. And it gets more complicated in Kingdom Hearts mythology. Like, I'm pretty sure, not mythology, but Kingdom Hearts lore. Like, I'm pretty sure they come back to life. Those worlds come back, but they're also asleep, and then you go back into them and whatever. In Dream Drop Distance. But
I guess this is reminding me of Lion King and the fact that, like, Scar takes over Pride Rock. Everything becomes desolate. They kick him out, they kill him, and then...
And then it rains.
There's a rainstorm, and everything's perfectly fine again.
Yeah, like, but see, I know they said that they were putting the digital world back together, but I guess in my head I assumed that the Digimon were staying there to help put it back together. Like, there were consequences.
I guess that's true. I guess I assumed that, you know, like, Genei would be involved in reforming it and stuff, too.
Yeah, and, like, in Season 2, there is something they mention that the kids had to go back and do for the digital world.
Well, that's BS.
Yeah, it was. It was to explain why they couldn't digivolve, but yeah. But there were some consequences.
I mean, they had to have some consequences to reset things so that they could have a threat in the next season. But also, I'm pretty sure that gets revealed halfway through Season 2. And yet, Kari and TK participate in it and don't mention it until then.
Yeah.
It's true. Kari and TK are just like that. And they're like, yeah, whatever. They like to have their little secrets with each other.
Ooh.
Okay. I'm not saying... I just feel like it's a very easy route to take with storytelling. It's a way to raise the stakes, introduce things that seem so dire. What frustrates me the most about it is that it plays on the perception that such an easy resolution doesn't exist. You know, like, when we first are introduced to Spiral Mountain, it's like, wow, stuff has changed. Things are so drastic. And you don't assume that it's as easy as just defeating the bad guy. And then once you do find out, it's like, oh, that was it? That's less than I expected. So it just seems like a weird story down the list because I feel like as long as you're thinking about it at all critically, it's always going to be, or not critically, but thinking about it logically, it's always going to be disappointing.
Yeah.
It's just the mismatch between, like, trying to raise stakes on one hand and not have to, you know, deal with that.
Yeah.
Did I repeat myself too much?
No. I mean, you'll figure it out when you edit.
I also think Ash and I were confused by your argument in the beginning. So.
Yeah, I think we figured it out.
The other thing I had to complain about was Spiral Mountain just making no sense in general.
How so?
Do you know what? Spiral Mountain reminded me of a lot of things in this arc actually reminded me of JRPGs. I mean, I kind of mentioned Kingdom Hearts, and that's, I guess, not technically a JRPG. It's an action RPG and whatever, but it is an RPG-esque made in Japan. But the way they defeat Myotismon, and it's like, no, it's actually Venom Myotismon. And they defeat Venom Myotismon, and it's like, no, it's actually the Dark Masters. And they defeat Dark Masters, and it's like, no, it's actually Apocalypse. Reminds me of a final boss encounter in a JRPG.
Oh, yeah. Final Fantasy. It's this boss. Oh, no, there's 5 more bosses after that.
You thought you were done with the game. Here's another boss.
Well, here's another boss.
I have not yet begun to reveal my true power.
Yeah.
Oh, you cleared the health bar? Oh, here's 2 more health bars!
Yeah.
But so specifically with Spiral Mountain, what I thought of in terms of JRPGs was, it feels like whenever they show the, so they have 2 different settings. They either are on Spiral Mountain, and it's just like the world as always. It's just like a flat continent. And they zoom out, and they show Spiral Mountain as a whole, and it's this crazy Spiral Mountain thing.
Yeah.
I'll describe it. Like, there'll be images in the show notes. You can look at it.
Well, if it's really big, the slope could be very gradual.
And yes.
But it's the whole world condensed into a mountain, right?
Yes. So how do they walk up the whole thing? Like, so
they fly up part of it.
So that's the thing, like, they fly up part of it, and the way they show that is by just, like, they fly up and they're in the zoomed out part.
Yeah.
And they land in the zoomed in part. Like, they never show...
Yeah.
They also, like, they show Mimi climbing up the edge of the cliff at the top, but, like, how does that work? Do you just, like, walk along this flat part that's, like, a continent?
and then you get to like a cliff that goes upwards, and like the gravity just shifts as soon as you.
Maybe it has some kind of inner gravity.
Right. So I'm not. That's totally possible in the crazy, wacky world of Digimon.
Yeah.
I just wish they showed it. Like. I just.
It's pretty messed up.
They could make really cool scenes showing the like weird geography and.
Oh, ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, it's true. Like they, so many corners they have to cut.
So while editing, I realized I never actually got to my point about JRPGs and Spiral Mountain, and it was basically just the way it zooms in and out and never shows the state in between. Reminded me a lot of world maps that, you know, you zoom out to the world map to go up the mountain, and then once you go to location, you're zoomed in.
I'm more confused by the fact that, like, sections get deleted when they defeat Dark Masters.
I guess I always thought that it ran back into the world without their power holding it up, but they totally just vanished, didn't they?
They just vanish, and then they show the kids in parts that, like, you think should be vanished, because...
Do they?
I think Piedmon's part had some woods in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in this arc they were all in Piedmon's part. Key, they were in Piedmon's parts.
Wow, Jeff. Wow. Wow.
I'm not even going to acknowledge that with a laugh.
I mean,
how do you know that they're Piedmon's parts, though? Like, what?
Piedmon's parts.
I'm going to kill you.
Because none of the other parts are left.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's inconsistent then with them showing, like, shouldn't Puppemon be woods? What is Piedmon's parts? Like, wasteland. I don't understand.
Maybe he just got all the, like, most natural resources.
No, it's wasteland. They definitely described that before. Or at least I read it.
Piedmon?
Yeah.
But then they shouldn't be in wooded area.
I guess they just had a lot of woods. They had a lot of backgrounds for woods.
Well, they're not in a heavily wooded area.
Now, Mimi's area seemed pretty heavily wooded.
Yeah, it did.
I guess so.
And Mimi and Joe?
I think, I don't know if this is actually justification, but there was a decent amount of, this isn't just in the dub, this is in the Japanese too, in the original and the designs and everything, but it was going for a very Wizard of Oz feeling. I wouldn't be surprised if that was to evoke that. The Vilemon are very much like the monkeys in Wizard of Oz. I remember there's a line that is a reference at some point.
Sora says...
There's no place like home.
Yeah, she said there's no place
like home. She does, really?
She does.
That's just sad.
And it made no sense.
It made 0% sense.
Andromon is a tin man.
Who's the dog?
Salomon?
She's not even in this arc.
Shh.
Go on.
Wow. Wow.
I just, like, I don't think it would have been that hard to show the oddities of the mountain landscape close up. And it just feels like they didn't think it through thoroughly, but I would not be surprised if they thought it through perfectly and just didn't have the animation budget.
Mm-hmm.
I like how at one point Ty says he doesn't even understand how they got up to the top. And I'm just like, you and me both.
Yeah, yeah.
I like how Sora was like, this is the top of the mountain. This is obviously an evil person's lair. I don't see how it could not be an evil person's lair. Like, way to stereotype, Sora.
Yeah, what if it's just like Jenna's house?
Yeah, I don't know, Sora.
Well, we know Jenna's house was Midas Mind's castle. But...
Well, actually, it's the bottom of a lake.
Oh, well, I meant like his original. I guess. Never mind. Just cut out my entire voice. I'll just delete my file.
You already did that.
No, we don't want you to do that. We have to talk about the ending.
Okay. All I had to say was that, you know, the Dark Masters on the whole were not, and Apocalypse more so even, were not satisfying and bosses. Like, it was all a letdown after my Yoda spawn.
But that's also like a JRPG. Like in Final Fantasy, the real final boss is always kind of like a disappointment compared to the couple you fought right before that.
Was Sephiroth a disappointment after Final Fantasy?
I thought so.
Oh.
Yeah?
Who was a better end boss than Sephiroth?
Well, so spoiler, minor spoilers for Final Fantasy VII, but Sephiroth, once you fight him, you know, like starts, you know, like you encounter him throughout the game as this like dude, right? And then in the final boss, he becomes an angel-like thing. And
yeah,
what I found disappointing about it was that he like had these attacks that were supposed to be really climactic, like the one that destroys all the planets and
yeah,
you know, collapses them into Earth, and it does like 1,000 damage, and it didn't feel like
I think it's inherent in an RPG, though, that, like, when it's turn-based, when it's all about stats, like, if you're just too strong, then, like, they're just not going to be threatening. Kingdom Hearts, though, Sephiroth and Kingdom Hearts is, like, in both Kingdom Hearts and Kingdom Hearts 2 is, like, so well done. I feel like that was, like, the perfect execution of Sephiroth, because he's...
Oh, yeah, those battles were so hard.
I feel like after playing those, I did not... Sephiroth in a turn-based battle just did not seem as threatening at all. Like, he's so fast, so agile, so has so much reach. His sword is huge, and
yeah,
I thought that was really well
done. It's like, even if you look up a guide of how to do it, like, you actually have to have super skill yourself to be able to execute.
So, like, there are ways to farm to get to level 99, and even then, you have to, like, actually be really skilled at execution to defeat him, and yeah.
That's why I never did. I never tried.
I'm thinking of, like, the actual sequence of fights. Like, I think in Final Fantasy X, it's, like, there are definitely, like, three or four people you have to fight at the end, and the first couple are actually really hard. And then I thought the last boss is, like, you can just throw Phoenix Downs at it, and it'll, like, die because it's an undead thing or something.
Okay, Ashley, you couldn't beat Final Fantasy X?
I know. I didn't level up enough. You didn't? I don't even think you could beat it with my characters.
I think we used my save file to do it.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Well, I mean, if you're watching that, then it would have been super anticlimactic because I had over-leveled them way too much. But, I mean, definitely cinematically, the 10 is definitely that. I think it's kind of the point of 10, at least, that, spoilers for Final Fantasy 10, there's the thing that is behind everything is really anticlimactic and kind of just a little evil bug thing. And it possesses stuff, but then, like, the stuff that possesses isn't that strong. Maybe it's supposed to be, but it's still anticlimactic to be, like, throughout the game you're finding these big, like, there's, like, one villain who's a really big personality, there's one villain who is a giant killer whale that destroys the world every 10 years, and then you fight this little bug.
And then you get Final Fantasy X, too.
But we're going to keep talking about Final Fantasy, but in Final Fantasy IX, there is a character that you, like, a villain that's hyped up for the entire game, kind of like Seymour in 10, where it's, like, a villain that's hyped up throughout the entire game, and then throughout, like, you fight him in the final, I think you fight him near the end, like, as, like, the first in the series of final bosses, but then the actual final boss is, like, other stuff that's wackier and crazier and bigger scale, but it's still not the person, not the personality you've grown to antagonize, which... I feel like that's kind of how it's done here in Digimon, where my Digimon is really hyped up, and then you get these characters that are, like, flushed out really quickly. Like, here's a new big bad guy, and, like, Puppetmon at least gets some time.
Yeah.
But the others are just, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, Apocalymon is only satisfying in retrospect when you assign tons of evolutionary theory to him.
Like, he could have been so cool if a prophecy alluding to him had been told... way earlier in the show,
basically.
Knew that, like, there was this crazy Digimon being locked away.
Yeah, but no. They just had to get their last two episodes in.
Yeah.
It's weird, though, because it doesn't feel like any of this is actually filler. Is anything that's rushed?
Yes, it does feel rushed. And then they don't even, like, reunite with their parents. We don't get to sort of see how... We don't really get to see the culmination of how they've grown compared to when they left.
Although, if I had to choose, I would choose to see their goodbye with the Digimon.
I wanted both!
You can't
cut out Apocalymon. Cut out Apocalymon and give me both!
Yeah.
Cut out Machine Dramon and give me both. I don't care.
Cut out both of those people and give me
both. Cut out Dark Masters! No, then we wouldn't have gotten to see Kari do anything.
Also, we wouldn't have gotten Metal Edamon being poked in the butt by Pinocchio.
Right.
We wouldn't have gotten Puppetmon.
Puppetmon's worth it.
Well, Puppetmon, he's not worth the entire thing. He's worth the five episodes he's in.
Saber Leomon looks ugly.
Yeah, Saber Leomon was not worth it.
I mean, I like seeing Leomon again, but I like seeing Leomon die again, but...
Wow.
Unanswered questions.
There are just so many. Where do we start?
Yeah.
Why Spiral Mountain? Where did the Dark Masters come from? Firewall! Why?
No, the best is why in episode, I guess it's 51, where Piedmon is chasing all of them through the damn little whatever cave thing that he has where there's circus things. Why don't the kids digivolve and fly? They have several flying Digimon.
They're like, we need to use not trampies, but the ropes and have Gatchaman carry everyone.
Yeah, what are those called? I know what those are called. Trapeze.
We have Mega Kabu Terrymon and Angewomon and Bergermon.
Yeah.
Angemon. Oh my god. My biggest unanswered question is that. I still don't know why Apocalypse has all the attacks of the other evil Digimon. I guess that was explained because it's different in Japanese.
Is that
a thing that Jeff explained?
I think so. I think it looks cool, whether it's explained or not. So I struggle with these unanswered questions so much because it's like some things are just so blatant. It's like, okay, I don't care. Like, it's like, how to describe this? Sometimes I correct people's grammar.
Sometimes.
I do that if they like get 99% of it right and like there's one mistake. I'm like, okay, they'd probably appreciate the mistake. When someone just makes a lot of grammatical errors and it's like English isn't their first language, my inclination isn't to be like, here, let me like fix your sentence for you.
I understand what you mean. It's like they don't care, sort of.
No.
It's applicable when people, English is their first language, and they just spell like that.
True. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's true. Because if English is their first language, they don't care. If English isn't their first language, I feel obnoxious, like, telling them how to English. Like, I don't want to, like, be mean to them. Like, they are so much better at English than I am at any other language. I feel terrible correcting them. And I think that's what Digimon is like, where if it's like, if there's a minor error, I'm like, come on, why didn't they get it right? But if it's just like so full of errors, I'm just like, we could make an entire 20-hour a week podcast listing the animation errors in each episode.
Oh God. Sometimes I don't even actually watch what's happening on the screen because I'm just like,
yeah, I'm just like, there is a battle happening.
And yeah, so I don't want to like ever get hung up on those things because there are lots of really cool things about Digimon if you just ignore those things. And I think we should ignore those things. But then they're, so I don't know what the line is. Like, where does it become this thing where it's like worth bringing up as a ridiculous question or an unanswered question and yet not like punching downwards? So with that explained, I forget who says it, but someone says like, someone mentions that Wizardmon is going to be reborn. And I wasn't sure if that was just that character wasn't aware of the rule that they're not reborn if they die in the real world.
That rule is never mentioned in the show.
Right. I'm wondering if they mention it in 02 or if it's never mentioned at all in the show. But it's definitely at least true that like they think that whoever that character is thinks that Wizardmon is going to be reborn and he's not.
Yeah. Who was it? Kari or Gatomon. I think it was like Mimi.
Yeah, I think it was Mimi like listing everyone who died. And he's like,
yeah. No. It wasn't even everyone.
What if when they die, they're like, Wizardmon's like ghost lives there, but then he gets reborn too, and he could just like make copies of himself when he dies? Wait, this is an adventure time episode. Never mind.
I don't think that's how the concept of reincarnation works in Buddhism, which is probably what informs this show since Japan. Probably his ghost hangs around there, and then after it goes away, he might get reborn. If that rule is not a thing. Because I've never heard of that rule until you mentioned it to me. And maybe it's not true. And maybe he'll come back someday. That would be nice.
I feel like it's not a rule explained, and there are a few enough data points that you could apply lots of rules. Like, characters who are killed on top of buildings don't come back to life. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if it's ever going to be confirmed or denied. Maybe I should play the Adventure PSP game, see if they acknowledge it in that.
In there? Oh, if the rule is in there.
Maybe. Yeah, they're different canons, so. Anyway, my other question, and this is more of a, actually, it made me remember something that I forgot to mention earlier. Where is it? I wanted to have a segment. Where did I put it? Oh, did I put it here? Oh, yeah. A segment about things I learned from Digimon that I remembered from this arc. First is what the white flag means. I did not know what that meant when I first saw this episode 15 years ago. Or
that's
14.
Just bad.
What? I was nine.
Nine? Oh, I guess I was older because I watched the rerun.
Anyway, I also learned what the word breast meant. because, let me explain. So, I had seen up to the Piedmon episode. So, I hadn't seen the episodes of the Pokemon hadn't aired yet. And on my friend's computer, we found summaries of the next two episodes and the first episode of 02 from Japan. And it was like this crazy world of like, how does it exist that hasn't happened yet? And we like read the summaries and they weren't that in depth. So, I was still surprised and loved watching it when it actually came out. But the description for that last episode, I guess it's the second last episode, when the crests are destroyed and they start activating in their chests. The recap, or the summary said, like, it glows in their breasts. And I was like, I think I may have known that meant, like, what breasts meant, but I didn't understand what, like, breast, singular, collective, whatever it meant. And I wasn't even sure, like, writing this down, I was like, I'm still not sure if that's the right usage. And yeah, it does mean, like, the
yes,
abdomen to neck area of the chest.
Yeah, it's definitely men have a breast.
Like a breastplate. And yeah, so that's what I learned for Digimon. And back to unanswered questions. this is related to it because I think Digimon taught me the wrong thing in that is not a cable car. That is a, like, actually, what is the term for it in San Francisco? Okay, I like that they refer to San Francisco.
Trolley?
It's a light rail powered by electricity, and, like, it would connect to electric wires on the top. This is not a cable car, though. Let me look at the definition of cable car.
Wait, I need a picture of it, then.
Of the bus?
Of Digimon. Cable car.
But I really liked how they referred to it as Gen-I City stole from San Francisco.
Oh, come on! It's gonna be one of my, like, dialogue things, maybe.
I can't find a picture of this. Maybe because they only refer to it as cable car in this episode, and they refer to it as trolley elsewhere.
This is fan art, but I think this...
Is it the one with, like, the creepy Agumon eyes? Yeah, the creepy Agumon eyes. Those eyes are so creepy.
They're okay.
Look at those eyes. I'll say Agumon.
Anyway, it's definitely not from San Francisco. It's not a light rail.
Not a light rail either.
It probably is.
It's not.
How is it not? Though.
I mean, it doesn't look exactly like San Francisco, but, like, it's not a cable car. Like, it has the things at the top for...
not a bus either.
Totally a bus. It's not a cable car. That runs on electricity.
So, as far as I can tell, there are two types of cable cars. There are probably a lot. There are aerial lifts, where it's, like, gondola-esque thing. Like, where you take two, like, go skiing, that kind of thing. Or the kind that is referring to when it says cable car from San Francisco is a car that, like... has some kind of hook that goes into the ground and hooks into a series of cables that are pulled under the ground, which is not what this is.
Right, it's not that either. I thought it was the trolley, though.
Might be a trolley.
Yeah.
Because that would make more sense than the cable car.
Yeah, it does look like trolleys in San Francisco, but I mean, too new to...
Is that the trolleys from...
By the way, Gabumon is the one with creepy eyes in this picture.
They all are creepy.
Palmon has really... Or, not Palmon, Patamon has creepy eyes, too. Palmon looks great.
Oh my god, Gabumon! Patamon, they're all...
I think Biomons are the ones that are freaking me out the most, though. It's like going up into her feathers.
So this artist does a lot of the, like, this one artist does most of the really awesome Digimon fan art. But it's just the eyes are so creepy.
The kid's eyes are okay.
Also, hopefully he'll do another, like, he seems to release an art, a thing like this every year for August 1st, so.
Hmm.
Hopefully there'll be another cool one this year. I'll put in the show notes a picture of a trolley car from San Francisco, which is what it generally looks like.
Definitely a trolley, guys.
Also, the one I'm looking at is in San Francisco from Philadelphia.
Ooh, yeah. My favorite.
Also, the website is phillytrolley.org.
I feel like I've, like, been on this trolley.
I mean, we have ridden that line.
I know. I always see this yellow one. Also, like, the green one that's, like, from Italy or something.
Anyway. Any more questions?
Why didn't they end with Myotismon? That's my
biggest question.
You can pretend. Just pretend they never went back to the digital world.
Can't just pretend that. Otherwise, Kari wouldn't have gotten any EXP.
You had EXP boost the whole time. She had the EXP share while she was out.
I accept that.
Ridiculous dialogue draft. Where we go around and each pick our top three funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching lines from the episodes.
Episode in this case, probably.
Episode? Oh, yeah, that's true. From episode 53.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a couple,
but I mean, they're all outshined by the ones from episode 53.
All right, you can tell us your favorite episode 53, audience, you can tell us your favorite episode 53 dialogue thing in the comments or something.
Ashley,
please
Ashley,
tell us.
It's called a quote. What?
Yes, it is called a quote.
A ridiculous dialogue thing a ridiculous where words dialogue thing. Happen?
My brain cannot function sometimes, guys, okay?
It's helping you out. Helping you English.
Yeah. I didn't study English college or anything.
Yeah, that wasn't your jerk.
That wasn't my major, no. Oh, I guess I have to take an Apocalypse one because y'all are gonna jump on that so hard. Aren't this like his whole freaking soliloquy? It's like, why do you... This is episode 53.
Okay, actually, do not cite the whole episode. Do not cite the whole episode.
Define the whole
episode. It can have at most one. It can have exchange. Like, the person voicing the quote can change once. So you can have, like, one person, then there, another person's reply.
No, I only have. This is only a Pokemon.
How many minutes is the quote?
I don't know.
Okay, just go.
Why should you get to laugh when I am forced to cry? Why do you get to taste the best life has to offer while all I do is choke on its leftovers? Answer me this! Why do all of you get the pizza while I get the crust?
I actually was really okay with this line up until leftovers.
Yeah, exactly.
Then the last sentence was like, really?
Now, Ashley, I'm going to pull on Ashley and say you missed a part.
I did?
Yeah.
Probably.
In response, the Pokemon says, why do all of you get the pizza while I get the crust? Mimi replies, I can't take all these metaphors. And it's like, the metaphors are really not that complicated. You're so stupid.
I do remember appreciating Mimi's line.
I love Mimi. I wrote that.
I thought
that
the quote was long enough as it was.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true.
I wrote down just the pizza part and then Mimi's reply. So.
Me too.
I'm going to go with genuinely funny. I mentioned it before. The moment when Gabumon is recapping what happened when Matt's crest activated and Matt keeps interrupting him to stop recapping.
As for you, Matt, you don't have to say anything.
I know.
There was that time when...
Yeah, that's right. I remember.
And then you and I...
I know.
Remember when we...
Didn't you hear me? I said you don't have to say anything.
He gets, like, increasingly angry until he
it's
calms
really
down
great.
Again.
It's really great. I love it. Funny. It is really, really funny. They're so good. They're probably my favorite team. Oh, no. Oh. That's a lie, because Joe and Gomamon. But after Joe and Gomamon, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Mine is actually from the episode that shall not be named. And it's Ty. And he said, he's talking to Agumon, and he's like sort of, you know, pumping him up. And he says,
base is loaded, two out, and we need a slam dunk.
Ty, do you not understand any sport that isn't soccer?
No, and then the best was Sora was like, what?
Yeah, well, Sora knows at least two sports. We know Sora is the sporty one of this entire show.
I couldn't tell if Ty was being serious or actually joking.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Just hearing the quote now.
Yeah. I mean, he got part of it right. You know, you got bases and two outs.
Yeah.
But I just looked it up, and slam dunk is not a thing in baseball.
That's not a thing, no.
It's a thing in tennis.
What?
Apparently.
It's also, what?
It's a name for a smash in tennis. Also.
Smash Brothers?
Yes.
Also basketball.
Yeah.
What?
Obviously it's a thing in
what?
Basketball. It is also a manga, probably about basketball.
I think I've heard that's really good. I think that's the one that like predates Kuroko and is supposed to be really good.
Oh, is it my turn? It is my turn.
Yes.
Okay, episode 52. They're looking at the wall of fire. I guess it's the first shot of the wall of fire. And Sentarumon says,
look at all this fire! This is terrible! I didn't bring a single marshmallow!
Yes!
And then, what's his name? Genai extends the joke, too.
Oh, does he?
He's like, we should have had a barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
That was good.
I was just, the Centauri one was so good because I was like, oh, he's going to say something that's like actually terrible. Like, how am I going to get across this or something? And then he says, I didn't bring a single marshmallow. I was like, really?
It's so big. We haven't seen him since the first
time.
And then it's like, his first introduction, he's really grim, marshmallow. And it's like, okay. You've undercut the tone you're illustrating here, but okay. Okay, this is when Apocalypse is introduced. And we've actually mentioned it earlier on the podcast because Ash remembered it. And it's Apocalypse is like describing himself and says,
I am the ultimate evil, complete with hot and cold running water.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has like red and blue tubes.
I was so confused.
Like, I wasn't sure that's a thing that you're like, when you describe an apartment, it's like, it has hot and cold running water.
It's also the ultimate evil.
Yeah, those change.
There were so many quotes that are worthy of ridicule. It's very difficult to choose, but this one's from episode, this is from episode 54. And, oh god, Zudomon had just zapped one of the claw things, and Joe says,
all right, your hammer nailed it.
I was like, I had to pause the video and look at Andrew, and I was like, did he really just say that? Actually, I think we went back and replayed it. So
I think I did the same thing.
I cannot believe Joe said that.
No, I believed it. I was like, he totally just said that, and I'm writing that down.
It was such a like obvious pun that I've never heard before. And was I was like, did I just like confuse it in my head and get the words confused?
So bad.
Yeah.
Oh, me again. There's one that I found funny that I don't think anybody else found that funny, but I'm going to say it anyway because...
Is it in episode 52?
No, it was in episode 50.
Okay.
Oh, I mean the episode that shall not be named.
Yeah.
It was when Mimi starts complaining that she's tired and hungry and whatever, and then Joe just says,
Mimi, I don't know what to do when you're like this.
And just the way he said it made me crack up.
It actually really offended me.
Yeah, it's so like
it's so patronizing.
You're just crazy.
But like coming from Joe, it actually is really
funny. It was just the tone that he used that made me laugh. He was like, Mimi, I don't know what to do when you're like this. Like, I don't...
Okay, I like this line from Joe in episode 53, and he says, I think it's right when they're like in the darkness and Pokemon appears, and he says,
just my luck. The second I start enjoying my vacation, another monster tries to destroy the world.
And like, his delivery, too, is just...
I love Joe.
I hate Joe, but he's funny occasionally.
You hate Joe?
Yeah.
It's okay.
I most certainly don't like Joe.
I love Joe enough for the entire world.
He's like too much the butt of jokes for me to sympathize with.
That's what I like about him. All right. My last one. All right. I'm going to go with this one from episode 52. And it's when TK and Kari have just stumbled upon the rope that goes up into the sky, which I don't understand why that was a helpful escape. But...
I don't know. What was that rope? Wait, we didn't talk about that rope at all. Where did it come from? Why was it there?
I don't know.
Unanswered
questions.
Digital
world.
I really don't know. But TK, before they start climbing, TK says,
Mom always said never take candy or rope from strangers.
It's like, what? What?
You better not ever take that rope from strangers, TK.
Oh, Ashley, did you just...
I might have.
Ashley. Ashley, no. I think we need to end the podcast now.
There's so many good quotes, though. Oh, I'm going to take Ashley's thing where she does a fourth. So here's one from episode 51, when Gabumon and Matt are walking around in the cave. Gabumon's just like, still not sure what you mean by trying to find yourself, but I'd appreciate it if you didn't look in here.
Oh, yeah.
Gabumon, you are the best.
Also in episode 51, there was when TK and Matt reunite. TK says, hey Matt, you look different. Did you cut your hair? And Matt says, nah, I just haven't been using as much gel. And,
yeah. See, I love that moment too genuinely to put it in the ridiculous dialogue traps.
What?
Okay. I'm going to one-up both of you.
Okay.
Fourth one too.
Oh, okay.
And it's in the same episode. And... Matt, I think it's when he's in the cave and, like, being all emo. He says to Gabumon, I've been living a lie. And Gabumon replies, you're not real blonde?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
right. I missed that.
Yep, it was there. It happened.
You can find the show notes for this episode with detailed links and images of everything we discuss at podigist.com/11. You can also post comments there with your favorite ridiculous dialogue draft pick or any thoughts about this episode or the podcast in general. For the past couple episodes, we've had really awesome and thoughtful comments, so it's worth checking out to engage with other fans of the show, and we might discuss your feedback on the show. You should subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave us a written review. A higher iTunes rating really helps new people find the show, helps us find podcast listeners out there that are dormant Digimon fans, bring them into the community, and get everyone discussing things together. Special thanks to Erlon and Prince of Dawn for leaving awesome reviews since the last episode, and you should be cool like them. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and reblog us on Tumblr. Next time, we're going to download a dinosaur egg while watching Digimon Adventure the movie.
Bye.
And remember, never stop Digivolving. Hey, Ashley.
Hi, Jeffrey.
It's like a peer review of my sanity. Okay.
We pick up directly after the feat of... the feat of Machine Jamon. Nice. We pick up directly after the defeat. I can't say defeat. No, see, I can say it.
Do you want me to take that line, Ashley?
No, I'm gonna do it.
Okay.
We pick up directly after the defeat of Machine Jamon. You know what? That's...
I choose you, Asher.
Choose you, Asher. Can he eat you?
I'm not Pixel. You can't just say that. That's weird.
I can.
We threaten to eat Pixel.
I think it's weirder when you threaten to eat Pixel than when she threatens to eat you.
But sometimes when I like pet his legs, I'm like, this is like a chicken leg. Eat this.
No. Mean. Mean.
More.
You chewing.
Mm-mm. Growing up.
Growing up! That's me, oh hey.
What does it entail, Mon?
No.
Because when I was taking Spanish literature, we had to watch something about, they were trying to get this little girl canonized after she died.
I watched something similar in Spanish class.
It was a movie. Like, it was a fictional movie. It was probably the same movie.
It was Wishbone.
Oh. Okay. Mine was not Wishbone.
That's all I remember. It was like fifth grade Spanish class.
Oh, man. I love Wishbone. One of the best.
Andrew says Mimi is Sonic the Hedgehog.
How so? Make your argument,
Sonic
Andrew.
The Hedgehog likes chili dogs.
Uh-oh. Oh.
I did not know that. Is that, like, in the game?
I thought we were going for something
show?
Deeper.
It's
in the, like, cartoon from the 90s or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Mimi have to go faster? Sonic.
That's the other cartoon.
That's the other cartoon that doesn't Sonic. Maybe have it. Maybe, I actually think it isn't that one, too.
Oh, you know what? Oh, God. Good fanfiction idea. Just, like... Another set of Digidestin that are, like, running alongside adventure, just, like, fixing the plot holes. You know, just, like, will be near events and, like, describing, like, I don't know, giving more backstory to things that are just, like, randomly introduced. Or, like, are there that many plot holes in adventure, though? I guess we can talk about this in our wrap-up episode.
I would read the crap out of that.
I don't want to encourage too much Digimon fanfiction writing, because I probably wouldn't actually read anything.
I would.
Ash and I will read your fanfiction.
If it's good.
I wouldn't say there are so many plot holes as just lazy storytelling.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lazy things and, yeah. Except for the firewall. And the darkness. Or, like, Matt's ball of darkness.
You think those are plot holes? I still think that's just lazy storytelling.
I think it is...
Maybe the firewall is...
I agree. It's a plot hole. Okay, the ball of darkness, not really a plot hole. The firewall, I don't know. It's hard to classify, because, I mean, it's like, it's a plot hole in that this probably should be relevant to 02.
The firewall?
Yeah. But, I mean, in 02, there are so many things like that. So, I mean, this came up recently, or I was thinking of this recently with the Dark Ocean in 02, whether that's a plot hole or not, because it's, Dragomon or Dagomon, whether that's a plot hole or not, because it's a villain that's introduced and then never explored.
Yeah.
And I don't consider that a plot hole, especially since after watching a video describing how Cthulhu can never be done well in video games, because it's always this, like, if it's ever introduced in a video game, it's always this, like, you know, big villain that you can just defeat after you get strong enough. And that kind of goes against the whole Cthulhu mythos of it being this terrifying figure that is always daunting and, like, on the, or, like, you can never actually defeat, and it's always going to be invoking terror and stuff. That Dragomon / Dagomon in 02 actually does a good job of that, of it being this lingering threat that is always kind of out there.
Is it supposed to be Cthulhu?
Have you looked at Dragomon?
I mean,
it's visually, like, based on Cthulhu mythos. Although, I mean, it's like, that's kind of a superficial similarity. Like, the D-Reaper in Tamers is not visually, but in other ways, much more Cthulhu-esque.
Mm.
So it's, I mean, both the Dark Ocean, that Dark Ocean episode, that was written by Konaka.
Mm.
And he is a big Cthulhu writer fan. Oh, Andrew says that the episode, the dub title of that episode was a reference to it, too. I think it's called, like, His Master's Voice or something?
Yes.
Ashley, do you remember any of this?
What, about the Dark Ocean episode?
Yeah.
I do remember the Dark Ocean.
I mean, we really shouldn't talk about season 2 stuff until we get to season 2.
We're gonna get there, so not that soon.
Sorry. My bad, guys.
It's okay. It will be good to have, like, a...
Break.
I need a break. I need a break so bad.
Yeah. We'll be good to have a break and then, like, have a new season.
I will know Hebrew.
Yeah, there you go.
Are there any Hebrew Digimon?
Yeah. All the angels.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Like, Seraphimon, Ophanimon, all Hebrew.
Is there any more gender we want to talk about?
I just want to pretend episode 51.
So,
50.
So, episode 50 and a half. Seraphimon is the one that I can justify or accept as being Hebrew.
I believe Ophanimon. Is Ophanimon Greek? I don't know.
Doesn't sound Hebrew to me. Oh, cherub, too. Well, actually, is that Greek or Hebrew?
Sure.
I guess it's Hebrew because the plural is cherubim. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know what? So is Ophanim. Ophanim is Hebrew.
Also Sephiroth. I was so confused when I didn't know the word seraph or seraphim in like seventh grade and read the sequel to...
Many Waters.
Yes, 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 exactly. Have I told you about this before?
No, but I love that book. So I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah, so I read that book in seventh grade after playing Final Fantasy VII, and I was like, why are the good guys named after Sephiroth? It was so confusing to me.
You are so wrong.
I know. Actually, is Sephiroth? I think it is Hebrew.
Yeah, that is Hebrew.
Sephiroth.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's a Digimon based on that. I forget what its name is, though.
I think it's called Sephirothmon. Yeah, Andrew.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. No, it's... Oh, in Japanese. In English, it's Sakakumon, because clearly that's more...
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Because clearly Sakakumon is more, you know,
well, I think
English.
They try to avoid as many religious...
Isn't that... That sounds so much more Japanese, though.
That is Japanese.
Sakaku? What does it mean? Oh, it means hallucination. Why would you... It's called like Illusion Mon. I really remember liking that episode.
Because that sounds dumb.
Ashley, do you remember this guy at all? It's the giant like pod thing. The guy with the mirror turns into the giant pod thing.
I remember him visually. I don't remember what he did.
They all went inside him and it was kind of annoying.
I'm going to be like disappointed once I watch these episodes because I remember them being so good.
Oh no, no, my friend.
Maybe I will like season 4 more.
Wait, he took over Seraphimon? I don't remember Seraphimon doing anything.
In season 4?
Yeah, I remember him being there. Like, trapped.
Yeah, something. It's been a while.
Oh, I love season 4.
Did I tell you, I've been cleaning out my room, and I found so many Digimon Adventure stickers. So many. I don't know what to stick them on first.
That's what she said?
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know what you should put them on. See, like, I just, like, when I get stickers, I'm like, that's nice, and then I don't stick them on anything.
Yep.
That's what I have done in the past, but I have so many notebooks, I feel like I should decorate them. I have, like, obscene number of...
They all full of great stories, like the one you tumbled recently, written by, like, 9-year-old me.
Yeah, that was written by 9-year-old me. Not all of them, although I did find stuff from when I was in kindergarten.
I wrote a short story in, like, sixth grade that's very reminiscent of a Ernest Hemingway short story, and I didn't know Ernest Hemingway or anything back then, so I think that either means Ernest Hemingway is not as good as I thought, or I'm a literary genius. I don't know. I haven't decided.
You are Ernest Hemingway reincarnated.
Oh, man.
That would actually
That would really, really suck, yeah. He has so many problems.
Yes, I'm aware.
What if it's like the Avatar, but Ernest Hemingway is the Avatar?
No, that would also suck for humanity.
In sixth grade, I wrote a short story that was like, I think it was either like 10 or 20 pages, whatever it was. Everyone was like, oh my god, this is crazy long. And looking back at it now, I'm like,
long.
It's pretty long for like a sixth grader, but it's like really tiny. It's like tiny for an actual short story.
No, not for short stories. Short stories. There's no, like, prescribed length for
a
story.
Well, it was like Cardcaptor Sakura if it was set on a sunken Alaskan cruise ship.
What?
There were, like, orbs that had different elemental powers, and...
Sounds amazing.
I guess it was inspired a lot by the episode of Pokemon where the cruise ship sinks. Also, I had just gone on a cruise ship that year, so...
Neon Genesis Evangelion is supposed to be the best thing that's ever happened to anime, and I didn't like it that much. I didn't really like it at all.
I did not like that. You know what? I think the end of Digimon was actually, like, Evangelion in that they, like, didn't have the animation budget.
Well, that's what I tried to put that joke in the recap, but I kind of failed. But, yeah, like...
Oh.
I didn't know how to say, like, they pulled an Evangelion and ran out of an animation budget. Because, like, it doesn't work in the recap, but, yeah. I don't know if that was an intentional homage, if that's a trope that's originated since Eva to...
I don't think so.
Okay, not to be as extreme as Eva, but to have some kind of minimalist background setting for the last episode or the second last episode.
I just hate that everybody's like, this show is the best thing ever. It, like, messes with your mind. The ending makes no sense. And I was like, the ending made perfect sense on a literal level. I don't understand what you're all about right now.
It didn't really... Like, if you just look at the characters, it certainly made sense, because it's about the character. That's what it's really trying to be about, but, like, there's so many plot threads that are left unraveled. I don't think it's brilliant. I don't think it's the best thing ever. But, I mean, it's like Watchmen in that it hasn't aged poorly, but it has become the basis for so much of the media that has followed it.
that going into it, having seen the stuff that was inspired by it, it feels what is original about this.
No, it's still original to me. I'm just like, I don't care.
We can't mention Pokemon or else we'll be attacked on the internet.
Yeah.
Haven't we mentioned Pokemon in like at
least episodes?
Probably.
We mentioned Pokemon a lot, actually.
Anyway.
Usually in some form of a joke.
Ash, I'm afraid to ask, but which, if you only had one, the other?
Oh, I have thought about this long and hard. I would personally rather have Pokemon because Digimon, no, listen, Digimon always has like this destruction of the world thing going on, and you know what, I'd rather not deal with that.
I'd rather not deal with that. Nice.